Blog Talk Radio.
You are now rocking to the beats with the East Coast Music Mogul, DJ Mike Q, Queen Beat Productions, DJMikeQ.com.
Thank you.
Mike Cute.
Cut. make that shit go up and down. That bitch, 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 that bitch can't bounce like that. That bitch can't hold up, 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 make that shit go up and down, up and down, go up and down, up and down, go up and down, up and down, go up and down. That bitch can't pop like me, down, up and down, go up and down, up and down, go up, 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 hold up.
I think if I could just do a TV or a film or anything, I'd do that. Just the money. Of course, I do want the money because I want the luxury that goes with it. But I want to be wealthy. If not wealthy, content, comfortable. You know? I want to be somebody. I mean, I am somebody.
are now listening to DJ Mike.
Yeah. 4th Annual Carolina Awards Ball. Saturday, May 5th, 2012. Doors open at 5 p.m. Admission $30 all night. Location, Symphony Ballroom at the Blake Hotel, Uptown, Charlotte, North Carolina. Commentators, Icon Jack Mizrahi and Icon Jay Manolo Blahnik. DJ, Legendary Vonalore. Grand Prize, $1,500. Butch Queen Realist with a Twist. Mini Grand Prize, $500. Butch Queen Vogue Set. Mini Grand Prize, $500. Butch Queen European Runway. Categories include male figure versus female figure. Two trophies. One cash prize of $250. Butch Queen Face. One trophy, one cash prize of $250. Open to all, foot and eye. Male figure versus female figure. Two trophies. One cash prize of $250. Open to all, team street rest. One trophy, one cash award of $300. And 13 other $100 categories. The 4th Annual Carolina Awards Ball. Saturday, May 5th, 2012. Charlotte, North Carolina. See you there.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the State of Emergency Show, episode number 10, where tonight we'll be talking about gay life. Hello, chat room. As always, let me know if you guys can hear me correctly and if there's any negative feedback or anything like that. Well, any bad feedback. Hi. Thanks, Mr. Ann. Tonight we'll be talking about gay life, a show is dedicated to a message that I got about a week or two ago in reference to coming out of the closet and being accepted. So that's what we're going to kind of talk about a little bit tonight, as far as my gay life, coming out of the closet and being accepted, how it affects your family, your friends, you know, your education, and even your career, your job, and things of that sort. And this is gay in general. This can be for any type of gay, from butch queens, femme queens, drag, real women, butches, trans men, sex changes. It can be any type of, you know, life changing, life alteration, you know, event that we deal with, you know, in our gay life. And we're also going to talk about the hatred and the jealousy and the bigotry that comes along with our ballroom scene. A lot of us come out the closet, we're gay, we don't know where to turn to, we don't know who to turn to, and we cling on to our gay families, you know, our houses, our house brothers, house sisters, mothers and fathers. But along with this gay society that we're a part of, as far as the ballroom community goes, and not just really the ballroom scene, you know, in all honesty, but the gay scene as well, there is a lot of hatred within the gay scene, not towards us, but within ourselves, towards each other. And there's a lot of jealousy, a lot of bigotry. You know, we sit here and we cast stones at our own. And it all comes along with our ballroom community, because that is the majority of the people that are listening to the show, is the ballroom thing. I do have a couple of people that should be tuning on tonight. And thank you, Judge, for having a better phone than those cheap track phones last night. you're welcome. I hope you guys can hear me correctly. I mean, good. So I'm going to bring a couple of people on, and I do have a special guest that will be tuning in as well. He is a young gentleman that I have spoke with, and when he did tell me his story, it was one of the positive ones, but right out there, there's not that many positive ones. And if you have experienced issues coming out of the closet as far as with your own family, I want this show to touch upon reality and the real deal. Let's cut all the bullshit and put that to the side, but let's talk about the real deal. You know, coming out of the closet, or not even coming out of the closet, 9 out of 10 your parents, they know already about you, but how they treat you. And I want you to share your story with us, because there are people listening right now that need to hear what other people have experienced or what they are going through. One thing that has touched me over the past year is the fact that I've heard so many times, you know, and maybe it's been happening longer, but I've noticed it over the past year more and more, where I'm seeing a lot of teenagers committing suicide, very young children committing suicide. And, you know, of course, they want to say it's all about bullying. But a lot of the kids that I've seen that were committing suicide at these young ages were gay, and they didn't know how to deal with their sexuality. And they were bullied in school or, you know, ridiculed by their own family and things of that sort. And I've seen them taking their lives so much, you know, especially within the last year. I've heard it so much more. And in all honesty, it could have been happening so, you know, it could have been happening for so long. We just didn't really notice it so much because, you know, everything is viral now. So, you know, we can hear what happens so quickly. And I think maybe that plays a part in it. But the bottom line is the youth is really destroying themselves because of the way that they're being judged. And I want to just share this because I know that there are certain people that are tuning in tonight that is listening, and they want to hear your side of the story. They may be afraid to come on, and maybe they'll change their mind, but they may be afraid to come on, or they just don't know what to say. So I want you guys to be able to share your story with them in a professional manner, and just try to be as positive as you can. So before we go any further, let me bring on one of our residential cast members, the pioneer icon himself, R.R. Chanel. R.R., how are you?
I'm good, Jasmine. How are you doing today?
Today wasn't really one of the best days, but I'm blessed, and I'm
well,
here,
I think you picked a really good topic to talk about this evening, because we have so many of our youth who can't really express how they feel about their sexuality, you know, to family members, and some that want to express how they are to family members but don't know how to go about doing it, because, you know, there are family members that do support, you know, kids who are coming out, but the kids don't really know how to tell them that, you know, they're out. And sometimes, you know, they just need to know exactly how to approach the situation, or they may even just want to know what signs can they look for to see if the parents already know without them telling them. So I just think that there's a lot of people out there that could call in and give a small analysis of what they went through when they were coming out, you know, because some people it was easy for them to come out, and then some people it was hard for them to come out, and then a lot of times.
And that's true. For some people it is very easy, and some people it is really hard, and a lot of people are still kind of trapped up in it, you know, so you're right about that.
And it's really hard when you're in high school, and you're trying to fit in, and you're also trying to, you know, identify with your sexuality, and you know that you may be gay, but you're not sure if you're a butch queen gay, or if you're a butch queen who wants to be a butch queen and drag gay, or if you're a butch queen that wants to be a transgender gay. And it's just so difficult sometimes to identify with the feelings that you go through, because you touched on saying that there's all types of gays, and you really don't know what type you really are until you identify with someone that's of the same thought process as you, and you gravitate towards them. Because I'm almost sure that if someone was a butch queen, but they had female tendencies that were overwhelming, they didn't realize that they could actually become a femme queen until they saw someone who was a femme queen, and then they identified and they were able to try to connect where they could find out what to do to continue their process mentally, if you understand what I'm saying.
No, I definitely see, I definitely have to get your point 100%. So hopefully we can address some of it tonight and, you know, we can touch. My goal has always been to touch up. Not to touch up, I'm sorry. My goal has always been to touch that one or two, you know, those one or two people, you know, out of the thousands that we have and the hundreds that listen to the show. But to be able to touch one or two people and give them something to sleep on, you know, give them something to think about and something that they may have learned or something that, okay.
But the most important, before you go on.
Listen, chat room, come on now. You guys need to stop being so mean at times. Like, you know, try not to be so mean. Because that's what scares people away. But I'm sorry, go ahead, Tara.
Oh, my God. You threw me off with that one.
You know, the chat room is a little messy sometimes. But it's a part of our society. But wait, hold on. I don't want to keep the callers on. I mean, the two other forever. Before we go any further, let's bring on another young individual I have a lot of respect for and who has been a part of the show, the overseer of the house in Mizrahi, TJ Mizrahi from Detroit. Hey, TJ.
Hey, Jazz, what's going on? Hey, hey, everybody, what's the topic?
Hey, how you doing?
All right.
Are you still driving?
Yes, I'm actually about to be heading to God's house.
Oh, okay. Well, I can still hear you clearly, so that's important. So thank you for tuning in tonight.
I think this is going to be a good show tonight.
Thanks. Another person I'm going to bring on is someone who is very young, and he's not, you know, particularly known in, you know, the ballroom scene as of right now. He's kind of new to the ballroom scene itself, but he's a young gentleman that I had the pleasure of speaking with a few weeks ago, and when he told me a little bit about his story, I realized that, you know, I was speaking to someone young and fresh coming into the ballroom scene as well as the gay life. And, you know, it just kind of touched me a little bit. So I'm going to bring him on. Gay, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
How are you?
Hey, everyone.
Hey, how you doing?
So, Gay, I want to start off a little bit with you just so you can share a little bit about yourself. I don't know if you know who RR is, but TJ Mizrahi, and I know, of course, they don't know who you are. So I want you to introduce yourself to them and tell them a little bit about who they is, you know, a little bit about your history.
Okay, a little bit about me. I've been born and raised in Philly all my life. I've lived with my grandparents. I just so recently moved out of there, and I'm living with my mother. What else? I've been out since I've been 14.
Okay.
Pretty much background.
Okay. RR, 14 years old. He's been out. And you have any feedback about that?
How old are you now, if you don't mind me asking?
17.
Okay, so you're basically new to coming out because you've only been out for 4 years, right?
Yeah. Well, 3 years.
You just turned 17, didn't you?
Yeah,
because I know when I talked to you, I think you were 16.
Yeah.
One of the things that Dave caught my attention with was the fact that, you know, he comes from a family where him and his mom are, like, the best of friends. You know, he's one of the good ones out there that has built a very good relationship with his mom where they can actually sit down and laugh and tea, and they're, like, really best friends. But there are a lot of people out there that lose their parents when they come out or when it's blurted out or when the family knows, but yet it hasn't been clarified. RR and TJ, with you guys and your history itself, how was it for you, RR, when you were coming out, you know, at your young age, and how did it, you know, take effect with your family?
Well, this TJ, me personally, it was like a living nightmare in hell for like a whole, I'll say, year.
Okay.
Me and my mama, we clashed every chance we got, and I just felt everything she was saying was being smart towards me. We argued daily. Over time, it did get better, and, like, she has an understanding now. This is the decision I made. This is my choice. She can't change it, but in her old mindset from the old days, it's wrong. She can change it, and she has to say so. But it's going to be a pain for, like, a first couple of years.
So it's painful for you for the first couple of years. Now, do you come from a large family, like a lot of brothers and sisters and stuff?
Yes.
Okay.
My family's mainly Southern and down South and real Baptist, so it was like I went against the grain completely, 100%, when they found out about me and everything, it was like I was blackballed. My grandma cried. She took me to church. She wanted to throw holy water on me. It was prayer. She called the pastor. Everybody wanted to fight. It was literally a headache.
Mm-hmm. Where did you, TJ, find closure in it, or have you ever found any type of closure? And where did you find comfort? You know, comfort with this. How were you able to move forward with this?
Well, the whole process of it, I actually have been preparing myself for like 2 or 3 years before it actually happened, because my gay father, Mooka Chanel, told me, that's something I need to prepare myself mentally and emotionally for, because once you go through it, there's no going back. You need to be able to take what's going to happen and everything. He basically told me every single thing I was going to deal with. The whole family wanted to disown me, the fighting, the arguing, the bickering, and the chastising and everything I was going to go through doing it. So when it finally didn't happen, I was prepared for everything that was going to happen, and I had solutions for everything. But the comfort that I found was my sister was still on my side 100%. That was the only person who really stood by me, both of my sisters. And then I lay into, like, Mooka and Janice and, like, my gay fam. They helped me through the whole process. Like, okay, well, this is what's up. You know, if you need this, if you want to move out your house, you know, me and Mooka actually lived together for like a good 8 months.
Okay. All right. RR, did you want to share anything?
No, I'm good.
Okay. So you have two individuals here, RR. You have Day, who, let me ask Day, based on a lot of the stuff that TJ was talking about, just, you know, for the record, did you experience any of that at all?
You asking me, Jasmine?
No, I'm asking Day, and I just wanted to know.
Okay.
Mine, I mean, I was always, like, afraid to tell her because she always felt the need to say something smart about gay people. Mm-hmm. But then I think it was Halloween of 2010, my friend, with the little help of my friend, Bacardi Gold, I was able to text her and tell her about it. And then the next day she came over, because I used to live with my grandmother, she came over, we just got in the car and we just talked about it and talked about it, and she just told me that she would love me no matter what. So,
okay.
And then we've just been best friends since then.
And that's good, you know. You got an individual here that was afraid to come up because, you know, he always heard, you know, the comments and things of that sort that his mother was making. And, you know, we've heard that before. You know, it kind of makes us feel a little, you know, goofy, you know, and, you know, uncomfortable when we hear other people talking about it. And then, you know, finally he does come out and realizes that she supports him no matter what. And they've been best friends. And then you have an individual like TJ, RR, who did come out and was taken to church and threw holy water on and pastors and fighting and arguing and, you know, all the rest of that stuff. Is this what you have run into yourself, you know, being who you are within so many house kids or gay kids of yours? Have you seen this a lot within our community?
Give me one second. I'm on a conference call. I think what the transition from CJ, right?
TJ and
TJ. TJ and the other gentleman, the transition is that the gentleman that just turned 17, what's your name?
Day.
You're living in a time now where information was so much more available to your mother, where she's actually been able to know that society accepts it a little better than when, back when I came out, it was unspoken. And this generation, let's just say the generation of the 90s, there has been such a bridge of openness with being gay that a lot of parents now, when they find out that their child is gay, they already knew, but they didn't want to confirm it by asking. But when the person came to them and validated that this is my sexuality, it hurt them because now they had to put a label with a face. But once they realized that it's going to be okay because society accepts that, it was a little bit more open for them to accept. So you came out at a right time, whereas when TJ came out, it wasn't the same thing, if I'm not mistaken.
Nope.
Am I right or wrong?
You're right, because my mother, instantly, first thing she said is, I don't understand why you would choose that lifestyle. All you hear about is gay people catching diseases, swinging off chandeliers, having sex.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, clearly you stuck in the old days.
Now,
how old are you,
TJ? 23.
Okay.
And this happened when you were how old?
I came out when I was 20.
Okay. Go ahead.
So I think with the difference in what's more accepted now than what was accepted then, you know, it's a lot easier for a lot of family members to accept it because a lot of family members today have gay coworkers or they've seen gay people in, you know, the neighborhood and things of that nature, and it's more open, whereas before it was more of a closet thing than everybody really just being out. And I think also what you have to understand is, me personally, I came from a single parent mother. And I think my mother knew about me before I knew about me. Because a lot of times our parents will shelter us from things that will condition us to be a little bit more passive than the average gay male, than the average male. And by the time you get to high school, you start to identify that I'm not like most guys. I don't want to play basketball. I don't want to run track. I don't want to play football. I want to take cooking and sewing. Do you understand what I'm saying? And that's all a part of your DNA as your sexuality starts. And in the beginning, it's not even about sexuality. It's about what makes you comfortable as a person. The sexuality doesn't play a part until you start reaching your hormones start to act up. But for the first part of coming out, it's just an identity thing. You find yourself being more comfortable hanging around females. You find yourself liking nice, pretty things. You find yourself sometimes even playing with your cousin's dolls or your sister's dolls. You don't want to play with a Tonka truck or G.I. Joe, you know? And you just do things totally different. But now your parents turn on the TV and they got shows like Glee, where it's open that, you know, you have characters who are openly gay. And here's this father who's a mechanic and his son is gay, and he accepts it. Do you understand? There's a big difference in acceptance these days, but it's up to each individual how they're going to come out to their family, because a lot of families may be cocoa for Cocoa Puffs and may not even care about what's going on right now and think that you're going to shame the family's name or they can't hold their head up in church anymore, you know, things of that nature.
Okay. And, you know, with that, that's right, because, like, I've noticed a lot of people who I've seen come out who are coming from single family parents, such as mine, it's like the mother then feels as if she's done something wrong. And it's like she just instantly tries to fix it, that she doesn't want it to go public that she's done something wrong, because they live this facade as if you are, well, technically you are their spitting image, but anything you do falls back on them, and they want to keep it as if you're the perfect innocent child and they did everything under the right. So when they feel as if you've done something wrong, they try to correct it real easily. And
exactly.
But their way of correcting it is not the way that it's supposed to be.
Well, let me ask you guys this. Well, before we go any further, if you are on the phone lines or in the chat room and want to be a part of the show tonight, please press 1 so I can bring you on during our topic and during our conversation. And I don't want to leave people on hold too long by pressing 1, you know, so I'm not going to just have everyone talk, and then we go to callers. I want you guys to tune in, you know, as we're talking, and I'll bring you guys on. I do have a caller. I'm not sure if they pressed 1 to tune in or they pressed 1 to get into the host queue, but the first caller I have is 704-713. You're on the air. 704-713. Okay. Well, I'm going to move you down to the bottom. So press 1 if you guys want to tune in and talk. Okay. So basically, here we have two individuals, one that is 17, that's been out since he was 14, and another one who has that is 23, who's been out ever since he was 20. I want to ask a question to both Day, TJ, and RR. An individual hit me up a few weeks ago, and they were really in a bad position. They basically got into a big altercation with their, you know, parents, and they happened to be sitting in their car. And this individual is 25 years old, has been out for a while. You know, there's no hiding, you know, what their sexuality is. And they basically felt, you know, trapped at one point. They were just hiding, and not hiding in the car, but just needed to be alone and needed someone to talk to. And some of the things that they brought up was, you know, every time we get into an argument, the first thing that's thrown in my face is me being gay. The gay topic has nothing to do with the argument at all, but it's something about me being gay. It could be my relationship. Well, you're in a bad relationship because you're gay. It can be issues at my job. Well, maybe it's like that because you're gay. When that individual calls someone else in the family and just says, oh, I'm just having a bad day, I want to talk. Well, do you think you're having a bad day because you're gay? Is this because you're gay? And you need to see a preacher. You need to go to church. And this is happening not to 16 or 17 year olds, but this is happening to older individuals as well. When they try to reach back out to their biological family and speak to get that comfort from their mother or their father, because that's always the comfort that we've always been accustomed to. Their sexuality and their lifestyle is always thrown in their face. So I want to ask you guys your opinion on that day. Have you had anyone in your family constantly throw your sexuality in your face based on anything that you were going through?
That never had, nothing like that has ever happened to me, unfortunately.
Okay.
My grandparents, they know, but they don't ever say anything about it, so. And my mom, she doesn't really care, so. But my advice to him is that he definitely tell his parents how he feels. And I'm sure he's done that. That's why he's asking you. But I feel like if they're not going to change, there's really no point of even dealing with them in your life.
Yeah, and that's coming from a young one. You know, if they're not going to change, you really can't. You know, what
all you can do is try, and if you don't get a response, it's really no point.
I think a lot of times when parents who feel like you said earlier, that it may have been their fault that you're the way you are, that when they lash out at you and call you faggot, they're not really lashing out at you, but they know that if they say that word, that's the only way they can hurt you or make you feel some kind of way, because they know that you're already insecure about what you're going through. You know, whenever someone feels like they have something that they can hit you with that will make you feel less than, that's what they use against you. And most of the time, even in society, they know that gay people are very strong-willed people. But the minute you use that terminology, you faggot, it brings a rage.
Yeah.
And parents also know that that's the only way they can really offend you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So if they say, you act like a little girl, you just shrug your shoulder. But they say, why you act like a faggot? You go into defense.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So that's the only reason why most people who are closed-minded will use that word, because they know that that's the only way that they can get to you. But you have to be strong enough to understand that your own, how my pastor says, you answer to who you are. And if you know that that's not you, because that's not you, you're not a faggot. You know, you're a man who has a sexual preference that's different than most people's sexual preference. You're a homosexual, and there's a big difference.
Let me ask you guys a question really quickly. And I also want to bring up that, in all honesty, there are some parents that are listening to the show tonight. And I want you guys to not only speak to the individuals that are out there, but speak to the parents as well. Because there are some parents that are just a little lost, or they are aware and they're just learning and this is new to them and they would like to know more about it. So I want you to listen to them as well, because I do know specifically there are a few that are listening right now, and I thank you as well for tuning in. But I want you to, and I'm going to read a message really quickly that someone did brought up, is what's really hard is coming out to severely homophobic people like my father. When you have very home, and that's what I want to touch up on, not even the fact of homophobic, but when you have family members that are homophobic or just don't understand gay people, and you guys are just having regular conversation, and the first thing that comes out of their mouth is, oh, I just came from the grocery store, and the guy that was both bagging up my groceries, he was some fag. And, you know, you're hearing your straight family, straight people, your aunts, your sisters, your brothers, your mother, your father, that's constantly saying these words. Oh, yeah, I've seen that fag. You know, that friend of yours that you went to school with, you know, the fag that you used to know. How does that make you feel when you hear these straight folks saying and using the terminology fag? And not just addressing you, but they're talking about other people. You know, Prince. Oh, yeah, I love that song by Prince. You know, that fag. That song by the fag. You know, how does that make you feel when you hear that? I'm going to start with you, Day.
I just feel like that's ignorant. Like, there's no need to call anybody a fag, even if they are a fag.
Okay. How does it make you feel, you know, working around straight people or, you know, you hear them say the word fag? Because I know personally, to me, it just kind of gets me a little like,
It bothers me, especially in this day and age that we're in, for someone to say something like that. But what I've learned is that most males who say that in the presence of someone who's gay, or they're talking about someone who's gay, like you just said, the scenario you used in regards to someone coming in this house at the grocery store and this fag was bagging my groceries.
Mm-hmm.
If you hadn't came home and told someone, who would have known who bagged your grocery? Evidently, that person affected you in a way that he's open with his sexuality and comfortable with himself enough that he can actually work a real job, and you're so uncomfortable with yourself that you got to talk about him.
I hear a little bit of feedback, but yeah, you're right. But are someone just sent a message over and said, but gay people call each other fags, so why can't they do it?
But we do it the same way straight people call each other, nigga, please. That's my nigga right there. We know that we're speaking in a terminology of identification. We're not speaking in a terminology of trying to degrade. And there's a difference between being degrading and being, you know, humorous with it.
TJ, are you there? TJ. Okay, I don't know what TJ is, but we got a couple of people that pressed one. Maybe they're pressing one.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Yeah, I put my phone on mute. I had walked in the guy's house.
Oh.
To me personally, the word faggot, it strikes a bit. I will admit, when someone strikes it and I know they're using it in derogatory form, it will piss me off. But at the same time, someone is right. We use it at the same time. It's like the word nigga. We hate it when other people use nigga. So we go around all day long saying nigga, nigga, nigga.
I want to call in, but right now the phones are tied up. Okay. Okay, I found out how to call from Skype. Okay, I have someone. Okay, press the one for me. I have someone that wants to
call. I can't hear you when you talk. If you call my name, I can come out here, but I got it muted because it might get a little loud over here for the next 5 minutes.
Okay, CJ, so just press mute for me. We're going to go to a couple of callers. The first caller is 214-477. You're on the air.
How you doing tonight, Jasmine?
Hi, how are you?
This is J-Rock, Big Pretty Ebony.
All right, J-Rock.
I'm doing good. I'm glad y'all actually having this conversation because not only in the ballroom scene, but just period, it's a lot of young people coming out, and I'm seeing the difference between this new generation versus when the generation when I came out, because I'm about to be 30, and it's just shocking to me how the young guy, like, he's like, it's like everything is fine and dandy, and I'm just remembering when I came out, it was so scary because I didn't go through high school. I knew I was different, you know, but not in the way I want to sew and all that stuff. I was a boy. I liked to play football, basketball, run track, all that. I was a boy, but I knew about the sexuality, and I was scared. We wasn't out when we were in high school, or it's not like today, like when I go into these high schools and they got out people. And I just think it's shocking how he's like, you know, he's just out and it's fine. Because I know when I came out, kind of like TJ, I came out, my brother tried to shoot me, run me over with a car, all kinds of things. And what y'all got to understand is some people are tied to their family mentally and emotionally to the point to no matter what. With me, I live for my family. I live for my family. I've been working since I was 14 years old. I live for my brothers and sisters. I'm from a family of eight. I'm second to the oldest. I did everything for them only to come out. And when I found someone that I loved, you know, and I was like, I'm never going to be in a gay relationship. Forget that, you know what I'm saying? I don't even know if I should be gay and blah, blah, blah. I'm going to try to find a woman, settle down, have kids, only to meet this person and love them so much that I said, I have to let them know. When I let my grandmother know, they're from the South, first thing she did, she said she already knew. So I'm thinking everything's going to be fine. As soon as I hang up the phone, this thing got out in the church. Oh, he's gay. Oh, my grandchild going to go to hell. All the parents, your parents, my mom called, my brother called, my cousins called, the whole family. And when you're in the South, you're so tied to your family and you grow up together. And when you go through struggles together, it seems like everything they say matters. But what helped me out was my lover being from New Orleans, where they don't give a damn what nobody say about them coming out, had to let me know, you know, hey, you can't, because at first they were like, you're dead to us, and I was like, I don't even know what to live for now because I've always lived for my family. And he had to let me know, hey, you got to live for yourself. And then when I got finished with that, now it's like, when your family, a lot of these kids need to realize, don't give them any kind of excuse to use gay as the reason why your life is messed up or whatever. So I kept doing my career, stayed in my job, and one thing they can say now is everybody else, the straight people in my family, they can say what they want to say, but I'm the only one that's been in the same career for 12 years, going to retire when I'm 38. I'm still that golden child. I still do the best I can. I mean, I'm not knocking nobody for doing drugs, but I don't do drugs. I don't do anything, and they have to say that is the best child we got. And now they're starting to get an understanding of I'm gay. I'm not like a fucking rebel or nothing like that, but I'm just gay, or I'm not going to – I mean, I'm the same person. I still love everybody, and it's just weird how we have to go through that, but the new generation is kind of like, okay, I'm going to love you regardless, and –
J-Rock, do you think the newer generation, the younger generation, RR, you would know best on this, do you think it's easier for them because their parents are, you know, younger, their parents don't come from the old school and so forth and so on? Do you think maybe that is why?
Yeah, I do believe that's true. Because you have to remember, like, the kids of the 90s, their parents were probably born in the 70s. And near the late
80s.
Right. Near the late 70s is when the Stonewall riots and stuff had already taken place. So there was a big gay movement going on, and a lot of people were coming out in the 80s. And they were openly coming out and strongly coming out. So those people in the 80s that were coming out, they had girlfriends that were fag hags. And those fag hags were messing with straight boys, but they were hanging out with gay boys. So if they had a child and their child just happened to turn gay, they automatically thought about the gay friend they had, and it was more easier for them to accept it.
Okay, now that we just said that, then my next question would be based on J-Rock. I'm going to leave you right here with us because your voice is very strong. What is the problem, RR and J-Rock, and even Day, what is the problem with why every time I look at the news, I am hearing about these young kids, 14, 15 years old, that are committing suicide based on the acts of them being bullied, and, you know, they can't reach out to the family, their own family and stuff, and they don't know who to reach out to, and they are killing themselves and broadcasting, you know, this stuff on YouTube, you know, their messages out to everyone on how today I was bullied, and last week they did this, and last week they did that, and it's all over the place now. These young kids telling themselves. How, if we are if they are coming from that generation, what is happening to them?
Can I touch on that one? This is J-Rock.
Go ahead, J-Rock.
Okay, this, with this, you know, with this being bullied for being gay, being bullied for being, you know, the skinny kid or the or whatever. This is the problem that's going on with the bullying. Just like R said, like we got the we got younger parents now and everything. What's going on with bullying? And this is what I've seen just from what I've seen because I work in a lot of different schools all over, and I just hop around the United States. Now, these kids are not being raised to. The new generation do not know how to take like hard times. Like they're being raised soft. Already, their parents is not in their life to raise them hard. Like when the old school, you know, like me, I was raised with my grandmother. My grandmother let me know that it's gonna be hard. You're gonna have to take this. You have to take that. You have to, you know. And then, but these new parents, they don't teach them these kids how people are gonna talk about you. But you know how when we grew up, and just because sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. They don't teach them kind of things to put it in their mind. That you're going to get talked about. People are going to talk, but you got to be who you are. Don't let nobody, you know, bring you down. You don't hear that kind of stuff no more. They don't even have cartoons about it no more. They don't even have songs about it no more. Like the greatest love of all and all this kind of stuff. I don't care what you say about me, the best love of the stuff. They don't have that stuff no more in this new generation. They're dependent on their parents. Only thing that matters is what their parents say or whatever. Now when they get out here, somebody say you're gay, you're a fag, you're ugly, you're fat, you know, they don't know how to take that. These kids literally do not know how to take criticism, i.e. back to the ballroom. Chop. Why did you chop me? Well, I didn't see your effect. You know, and you're like, oh, my God, I just didn't see your effect. The kids do not know how to take criticism because back when we were younger, too, you probably get that parent that said you can do whatever you want to do if you put your mind to it. But they would also tell you, no, you're not going to be a teacher. You're a good counselor or you're a good janitor. Now these kids think that they can be the world because their parents are just like, well, whatever. You know, so I think it's the upbringing, the different upbringing. The old school upbringing, they taught you how to deal with real-life situations. They even in the cartoons, Sesame Street, everything, they taught us how to deal with real-life situations, going through hardships, and knowing that everything is not going to be easy in life. Now everything is hunky, freaking dory.
And I also think
Shimbarai, Barney.
To piggyback on what you're saying, I also think that it has a lot to do with we weren't given a lot of things. We had to earn everything that we got.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And we did, if we wanted, say, a new pair of sneakers, we had to save our allowance, you know? If you didn't have a summer job and you didn't work for, like, you know, one of the summer programs, you didn't have no money for the summer.
At all.
And today, these kids, they got computers in their houses. They got cable TV. They got iPhones. They got everything that they want. And then their parents send them off to college. And then when they get to college, they realize, now I'm away from my parents. I want to explore my sexuality. But then the parents didn't prepare them for the people who are going to bash them. And now once they get bashed, they're so embarrassed that they don't want to face their family because they don't have communication with their family because their family buy them things to keep them away. I don't want to be bothered. You want a phone here. You want to go on a computer, stay on the computer. But if you ever notice that the people who are committing suicide are the people who have no communication with their parents. Okay, and the communication is not even so much the dialogue of their sexuality, but just the parents spending quality time with them instead of buying them to just be out of there, just leave me alone. Whatever it is you want, you can have it, you know. And I think a lot of times people are just looking for love from their parents, and when they don't get that love that they're looking for from their parents, they search for what that feeling is inside of them, which is their sexuality. And then when they find their sexuality, it's hard for them to go back to tell their parents about the sexuality because they know the parents aren't going to accept it. So they try to keep it a secret. But then when you go to college and someone puts a camera in your room and they expose you, you can't face your parents out of disgust. You can't face the people who knew you out of disgust. So you jump off a bridge.
I agree wholeheartedly.
you know, and it's a sad thing because the young kids today, they walk around and they think that, you know, being openly gay is cute, but they still have to remember something. There's still a lot of people out there who are homophobic, and they will hurt you just for being you. And what you have to do is you have to learn to structure your process of thought. Just because someone calls you a faggot, it may tear you up inside, but sometimes you got to walk through it. And I know there's been many a time, you can probably vouch for this, that when you were coming out, you walk through a crowd of boys, you might hear them whisper and say something, but you keep walking because you know, I'm not going to get involved in them. You know, it's too many of them, or I'm just not going to say nothing. But if it's just two boys and one of them say something, you're going to give them the eye and look them up and down and keep it moving because you know you could wear one of their asses out.
Wow.
You know, so, it has a lot to do with, I want to know if anybody out there can identify with this. Most of us who are gay, we came from single-parent families. Is that true? Or from a grandmother raising you, or from an auntie raising you.
Uh-huh.
I don't know of too many gay people who came from a mother and a father who had a stable marriage. I think a lot of gay people come from dysfunctional, and I don't mean when I say dysfunctional families, I should just say single-parent families. Do you understand what I'm saying?
It's J-Rock. I understand what you're saying because I've realized that, too. A lot of gay people that I know come from single-parent families, and most of them was raised by either their grandmother or their mother, and then I've even seen some that was just raised by a single father. So it's just weird how that works out, and I don't know if that plays anything into it. But.
And do you think that a lot of the DL gays that are being raised by their fathers only, they're DL gay because of the fact that they don't want their fathers to know, and that's why they remain DL gay all their life?
I don't know about that because, I know of a certain supposedly DL guy that was raised by their single mother, but it's kind of like it deals with, but then again, yeah, because they're DL because of the guys in their family, and they want to keep that my cousin, my brother, my home, my road dog and stuff. So they don't want that. A lot of people don't understand. Well, you know, the straight people don't understand that just because you're gay don't mean that you want to lose, like, that fatherly love or that brotherly love or that,
exactly.
You know, I still want to go to the game. I still want to go by my cousins and we can go, I'll go to the club with my cousins and everything. As a matter of fact, I might get you a bunch of girls, you know. But
okay. How long did it take you before your family accepted you when you came out?
Well, to tell you the truth, first of all, I left Dallas at 18, minister in the church, Sunday school teacher, everything. And I was trying my best to do what God wanted me to do. Went to the United States Navy. And when I went to the United States Navy, when I tell you I was the best person on that ship, because I wanted to make my grandmother proud and everything, by the time I turned 22, I started going out. And that's when I moved to New Orleans. And that's when I got stationed out there. And the thing about it was, when I came out at 22, I'd say 22, 23, 24, I moved back to Dallas, and it took about three to four years, but I think what really made them accept me is when they took all my pictures, from the baby pictures all the way up to the recent pictures, all of my trophies, everything I've ever done, they put it in a box, put it on the porch, and when I came home to leave one time to come see my family, I tell you, that was the most hurtful thing I ever seen. Was my 13-year-old brother tell me he got to meet me down the street at the corner to give me this box. Mm. And then when I got this box with all my graduation pictures in it and all my baby pictures in it and everything that, you know, that was very hurtful because it's like they erased me from their life. But what kept me going was the little 13-year-old that brought it to me, when he gave it to me, he gave me a hug and he said, I don't care what you are, and the rest of your brothers and sisters don't care what you are. We're not old enough
mm-hmm.
to make the decision because we're still at home, but we still love you. But to know that the people that you lived your life for and to make proud put your whole life in a box, tell you
mm-hmm.
to meet you down the street. I went hungry. I mean, I'm just saying, some of us went through a lot. So you should, like, the young man, you should be thankful to God that you don't have to go through some of the stuff that us older people went through, because I know I went hungry sometimes to send home my military paycheck to help make sure no lights got cut off, make sure school clothes got bought. I told them that I was fine, I was taken care of. No, I was eating noodles, eating peanut butter, all this stuff, sending home my whole military paycheck to say, it's going to be a cold day in hell before you walk in my house, and you're dead to us. So here you're dead to us from a family that you struggled with and made it up out of the ghetto with, and then they say you're dead to us. It's like everything you did is null and void. So
mm-hmm.
it took me a while, but like I said, my lover, God gave me the strength to be like, look, you got to live for yourself. Look, you're in the military. Everybody respects you. You are a gay male in the military running people in leadership positions, and everybody looks up to you and don't make a move till you say so. That's why I'm still in the Navy today, because it's like that was my second life, and that's what gave me life. And so then when I start telling them, look, I don't give a damn if you call me. I'm not calling you. You're going to have to call me because I'm going to live with or without you. Then they started realizing that I was the one that made sure those, you know, when the kids got older and they got grown and started being rebellious, I really think the younger ones started being rebellious because they seen how I was treated by
mm-hmm.
the grown-ups. So once my little cousins and little brothers got older and started being rebellious, getting in trouble and stuff, and they'll say, like if they say, because he's gay, they'll say, we don't give up, you know.
Right.
And
exactly.
it got crazy.
They
so
came to your defense.
To
right.
me. They had to respect me because they were losing control of the rest of the kids, and guess who they called to get the control back? They called me.
But isn't that always the case?
They know now. Now my grandmother is like, if anybody put their mouth on me, she disowned them. Because she said if one person ever stuck by her forever through thick and thin, it was her gay grandson. So she don't give a damn if he's gay, trans. She don't care what he is. And now
mm-hmm.
I know I got my two grandmothers that got my back, but it took them a while. And, I mean, that was very hurtful. I didn't even get emotional, but just to think about that box, that was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, J-Rock, I want to say thank you. I'm not going to put you on mute or anything like that, but I want to say thank you for sharing that, you know, because I think a lot of people need to hear that. And I also know the parents that are listening need to realize that, you know, there are other people out there that have gone through very similar things that their own children have gone through. And also of the fact that they can compare, you know, your story compared to Dave's story, compared to everyone else's story, that there has been a lot out there. It just affects people individually. It just affects them differently. But I do want to give a chance for the couple of the callers to speak. So the first caller I'm going to go to is Chance. I know you're calling from Skype. Can you hear me, Chance?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Hi, Chance. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
So what did you want to share with us?
Coming out for me, I came out at 16. I'm 19 now. But coming out for me was pretty hard because I did have a severely homophobic father. And my dad is in his 60s. So, I mean, he spent the most of his life in prison. So it was already a rough household. And when I finally told him, he was disappointed, he was upset. But the thing that mattered most to me was when I came out to him, he told me, you know, I don't like the fact that you're gay. But he said, just because of the fact that you're my son, I have unconditional love for you. And it was pretty powerful for me, but it's still a little, like, in the household that I'm in now, it's still a little wishy-washy because of the fact that he is who he is and, you know, me being in the ballroom scene and stuff like that. you know, I have, it's like, he wants to know so much about me, but it's like sometimes I feel like I have to tell him something else to, in order to prevent it from going to another level.
Mhm.
You know, so.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that with us. And I want you to just hit me up on Facebook if you want to come back on, but I want to give room and chance to the other people that are calling in. 323-775, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Hey, everybody and stuff. I just wanted to touch bases on the fact of, like, coming out and, like, you know, being bullied and all that kind of stuff. Like, for me, coming out was pretty much, like, I came out twice. Like, when I first came out, like, when I figured out, like, I was gay and stuff, like, I always hung around a lot of girls and stuff. And, like, I always was feminine, but I wasn't, like, the one that was feminine. They'd be like, oh, that's a punk or a fag or whatever, because they knew I would, like, you know, I would have, like, an anger problem and stuff. Like, I fought people. And, like, everybody wasn't, like, you know, fortunate enough to, like, have, like, you know, masculine friends. They'd be like, oh, you know, well, my friend's not gay or whatever, although they were gay as well. But, you know, we all had, like, little girlfriends or whatever. And it was like, when I finally, like, you know, I was like, okay, well, girl, I'm going to come out and, you know, fuck with guys and, you know, this and that or whatever. It happened to be, like, one of my, you know, best friends that was a girl, one of her boyfriends. And it blew up in my face or whatever. And it was a whole masquerade. But I feel like as far as, like, the bullying and stuff like that, you were being bullied, like, when you come out, like, when you figure out that you're gay or if they suspect that you're gay, just the same way as if you come out on the gay ballroom scene and you meet other people and they're like, well, who is this fag or she's late or whatever. I mean, it's like the bullying never stops. So, I mean,
well, yeah,
the lifestyle in general.
That's something I wanted to bring up as well, is that even when we come into the ballroom scene, it doesn't stop. There's a lot of hatred, you know, bigotry, you know, jealousy and stuff within the ballroom scene. So when does it stop, or does it ever stop, is, you know, another question that we have.
That's right. I feel like as far as that goes, I feel like you should be self-assured when you come out as far as messing with another male in general, because if your first, like, encounter with a man, you know that it's different, you should already know that the lifestyle is going to be even more once you be around a more, you know, popular setting with more people that, like, for instance, like, people that's on the down low. We're not going to be like, oh, well, you know, this and that put you all in. You know what I'm saying? It's not going to be that. It's going to be like, okay, well, you're cute. You know, you might be molested material, but you're not one of my girlfriend type of material. And when the girls, like, when they want to be the girlfriends and want to be like your sister and stuff, it turns into a big problem. It causes more of a conflict, or it did with me, with my situation and coming out. Like, how do you feel about the guys that are on the down low, they get on the scene, then they want to be like, well, oh, I want to be one of the girls, and then they're not the down low guys anymore. They're the flamboyant, like, oh, girl, Miss Dean, but, bitch, I fucked you, and now you want to, you know what I'm saying, have titties and stuff. Like, don't do that. I feel like that is a whole. You feel what I'm saying? Like, it's a whole.
Wait,
it's like a whole lot with, you know, coming out in general and coming out into the scene, coming out as far as, like, the gay scene. And as far as, like, when I came out when I was gay, like, I was 16, I was in high school, I told y'all I was messing with the trade or whatever, you know, our little language or whatever. And, like, I brought him to the gay club, and, you know, I got into conflicts with ballroom girls, although I was, like, you know, so-called a not or a lame or whatever. But, I mean, that's how I got my name. And that's not nothing that I'm proud of or, like, you know, nothing to be like, well, oh, girl, you know, you're just a ratchet queen, girl, and you like drama and conflict. But it was like, girl, when am I going to stand up and make a, you know, a name and stuff for myself, although I didn't need to make a name like that. But just like, you know, you're cool, you're nice, you know, you might be somebody that we can, you know, hang out with and be friends. But it was just like a whole lot. It was too much. Being shy and being raped and, you know, just a whole lot of different episodes and just getting into it with girls that feel like, oh, you're friends with somebody we like or whatever, and they care about you more than they care about the relationship or what. Just a mixture of a whole lot of things. I feel like the scene is what you make it. The person that you are doesn't dictate the scene or the selection of group of girlfriends that you do hang around or carry yourself with. Or I feel like you shouldn't be judged for how you carry yourself or how you handle your business.
Okay, caller. Well, I do agree with you, and I want to say thank you for calling in. I got a whole bunch of people that are pressing one, so I just want to give them some time as well. But thank you for expressing yourself as well. The next caller is 201-996. You're on the air.
Hey, what's up? How you doing, Jasmine? RR, this is Mark Ebony.
Hey, Mark.
Hi,
how you doing?
Hey, what's up? Hey, RR. I'm calling because my story is a little bit opposite from everybody else's. It's basically like I came into the scene from a straight life. So when I came in, I was mixed in between. Like, I was still doing straight things, but, like, going to the clubhouse back in, like, 97, 98. You know what I mean? Like, around that time and still, like, seeing things, but yet running right back to Jersey and, you know, like, hustling, you know, during the school time or whatever the case may be. I was already out of school. But I was still, like, hustling and doing different things like that. So when I came out, I wasn't even messing with men. Like, I started voguing sin before I even started dealing with guys. So it was, like, kind of opposite for me. So when I come to the scene, I come to a whole new world of different things. And when I decide to convert and I'm thinking I'm coming into this soft, settled scene, I'm coming into, to me, what's a little bit worse now than it was back then. But still kind of, you know, the people are still fierce. So when I came in, it was just like, wait a minute, these people are kind of bad too. You know what I mean? Like all the robbing and the carjacking and the hustling and the shooting, like, it's not much of a difference. It's just not any action going on. A lot of verbal, and like y'all was saying about the bullying and all of that, like, I see a lot of it and how it can affect people. But at the same time, like the caller before just said, like, you have to be reassured when you step into the scene for what is. You know what I mean? Like, when I came in, I met a bunch of older people. It was always icons and, like, Pioneer, Derek Estrada and Derek LaBeija and Tommy LaBeija and Eric Bazaar. Like, all of those people were people that I knew around that time. So when I came in, it was kind of sore for me. But as I went along, it got kind of hard. And it was just like, why are these people so horrible? So now when I come out or I go places and I see people, I just kind of, like, stand there, you know, and they're like, hey, what's up? I remember you. And I'm like, hey, what's up? You know, I speak as they speak, but I don't even speak to people now when I go out because it's like they're so horrible. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, I know her. I remember her from back in the day and so-and-so, and she used to be with so-. And like, I never understood that part of the ballroom, but I guess it is what it is. But I have to honestly say that I've never really experienced that whole coming out and having a problem with parents. Like, when I was coming out, my parents never really – I had both my parents, my father and my mother. But my mother, to find out, my mother was a lot more understanding. My father and my grandmother's side just found out last year at my grandmother's party. So, like, it was never really a big deal. And when I felt like my father was, like, closing in, I moved out. So that part just never happened. But I never really was looked at as the opposite child or the soft child because my mentality just never changed. I was always this rough, you know, I've always had a rough exterior. That's just who I've always been, you know, the fighting and the you know, the shooting and all of that different shit. It all happened in a different lifestyle. But coming over to this one, I don't feel like too much has changed because it's like I don't have to shoot and I don't have to fight as much. But at the same time, I still have to deal with the harsh reality that people are just as fierce and hello?
Hello?
Yeah, we can hear you.
No, so what I don't understand is, like, the parents of the people, because I don't know if my parents were, if it was just they were afraid or if it's just more other lines of I just never changed, like, as a person. Like, even with me, like, voguing and going to the balls and stuff, like, my whole persona just never changed. Like, I've always been the same person. So I don't know if it's the shifting of the personalities and the personas versus the, you know, just playing out being who you are or finding out whether or not you're gay is the whole, you know, gag for a lot of people because My mom was just, like, totally for it. And when she saw me the first time I brought a ball tape home to watch it, she was like, that's you? You can do that? I'm shocked. Like, she was in shock that I actually did stuff like that. So she was actually happy because it was a relief for her not to have to come down to the police station and, you know, bail me out or, you know, come outside and grab me from, you know, being on top of somebody, beating the shit out of them. So, like, it was a relief for her to see that I went through a different change. But at the same time, like, even now she's just like, you know, like, you don't see much of a change with you. Like, are you happy? You know, are you with somebody? You know. And it's not even that. I'm just very cautious about the lifestyle. I was not very cautious about my other one, which made me a lot more cautious about this one. So I don't know. I just,
Did you want to say anything about that?
No, I mean, he's basically saying, you know, exactly the truth because, you know, it's really strange how, you know, people... The identification is there, and I just like, when you look at people until you hear their story, you'd be like, wow, I'm just sitting here in awe because I never knew that. I'm just like, wow. This collaborative, I'm just hearing, wow, you know, so. And effective care. That's all. Please call 551-996.
Hello?
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. I'm at work. That's my job. That was my job. I put you guys on hold. I'm actually
okay.
A supervisor, so I had to take another call. I apologize. But, like what I was just saying, like, of the story, you know, I can identify with the people because I did have friends. A lot of them are dead, but I had friends that when I did come out, you know, with the story, what I actually pressed one for is what I heard you say earlier, Jasmine, was the fact that some people can identify with other people, or actually it was you, R.R., can identify with other people when they come out as far as, like, when you say people coming out who had the woman inside of them, who seen other transgenders that said, okay, I could be a femme queen. Mm-hmm. Like, when I came to the scene and I met ballroom people, I was always just very standoffish. Any house I went to, I was always standoffish. If I couldn't find the family-oriented part of it all, the people that could relate to me, I would just stay away. And it wasn't my version of shade. It was just more of, these people not ghetto, you know, like, they don't like to get down, like, they're not going to fight, so I'm just going to stay over here and deal with these people that I'm used to. And then when I met certain people from certain houses where it was like, okay, it can be whatever, it was just like, okay, I can get with that. So, like, that's how it's always been for me. So when I go out and I see people, a lot of people are like, oh, he's shady, oh, he's fierce. I'm not shady and fierce, I just don't know you. And if I don't know you, I mean, I don't really adapt to you too well. I mean, they don't understand the whole total another lifestyle that I came from, letting people in your set coming through, hustling with you, selling drugs with you, and then they rob you, and you have to go out and start, you know, pulling guns and shit.
And you
like,
know something? Let me interject on that, because a lot of times people don't understand that that's how we get our shade. You know, the ballroom community will mold you into the person that you're going to be as a gay person if you're in the ball game. Because when I came in, excuse me?
I'm saying, I agree.
Because when I came into the ballroom scene, I was really timid. I was really sweet. I was very open-minded to learning. And that's when people started, like, quote-unquote, bullying me. But the bullying came from shade. And I started to realize what shade was when I asked Paris to be in the house of Dupree, and she just kept shading me ball after ball after ball. And then I built up a tolerance where I figured this is what I have to do in order to fit in. And I became so good at fitting in now that I lost my identity of being that sweet little butch queen. Now I build a tolerance where people accept me now because I'm shady. So this is what's working for me, so let me run with this. And unfortunately, it took me through my whole ballroom career. So now I'm only known as that shady bitch. But at the end of the day, they created this monster. I didn't come in like this.
You're right, because the ballroom scene does have a tendency of doing that to different individuals. You're right. But, Mark, I want to say thank you for tuning in. I'm sorry to cut you off if I did. I want to get to a couple of callers. I don't want them to stay on too long. And with you guys sharing your stories and stuff, just take into consideration that there are some people on here that also want to share as well. So I want you to be able to express yourself but you know, let's leave some room for a couple of other people. But thank you to everyone that has been sharing so far tonight. The next caller is 301-655. You're on the air.
Hello, hi, right now tonight.
Hi, how
Hello.
Are you?
How you doing?
I'm good. I was calling in because well, first of all, like I've been loving y'all show for the past years or whatever, because my ex gay lover, he introduced me to the show, but you know, honestly, I'm not in the ballroom scene. I don't know what's going on, and I wanted to listen tonight or whatever, and this topic is just like I honestly like a lot of the stories that have been said, like I've been in tears, and I just want to say like you know like. I don't even know where to start from, honestly.
Just take your time and you get it out. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, but like me, I'm 25 years old. You know, I live in the Maryland, D.C. area. But at the end of the day, like, okay, what I'm trying to say, okay, a lot of stuff that people are saying that they've been through and that what they're going through, and to this day, I'm 25 now, but I'm still going through it, you know, in my own father, my flesh and blood, he still calls me all kinds of faggots, and he say I'm going to die of AIDS, and I'm going to do this and whatever. But a lot of that stuff, you know, me coming out, mind you, I came out at the age of 18. My father, he wasn't really in my life like that. But when I got in my 20s, he came back into my life, and when he found out about me being gay or whatever, he, you know, he still criticized me to this day, and I like it. Honestly, it made me stronger because, like, I was sometimes like I did. Honestly, I went to drinking every day and getting high or whatever. And then, like my ex or whatever, like when I started talking to him, and he's asking me, he's like, "Why do you drink so much? Why do you do this like so much or whatever?" And I was like, I want to get fucked up. I want to get full. I mean, excuse my French, but I want to get full, whatever. And he was like, something going on with you. And I explained him the whole situation, but I learned that, like, I was using, like, alcohol and particular drugs or whatever to get high. I just wanted to stay in the house, get high. I had lost my job, and I just wasn't thinking about nothing but getting high and drunk, because it hurts you when your flesh and blood, when they call you all kinds of faggots and... It still hurts me to this. It still hurts me to this day, and I don't know.
It's okay. We understand.
It still hurts me, and I really appreciate you for having the show, because I love this show. Since I've been talking, and I've been listening to, sometimes y'all be talking about stuff I don't be know what's going on about the ballroom stuff, and it's real. And I love this show. I love it. I listen to it all the time.
I really appreciate it, Corbin.
Yeah, I just get so, like, I just get confused.
Well, let me ask you a question. You said you've been listening to the show for a while, and from you listening to the show, has it helped you to be able to accept your sexuality a little better and be a little bit more comfortable with yourself? Because you still seem like you haven't quite come out yet, and you're still, like, searching for something.
I mean, prior to me, I mean, I've been came out, but it's just like not them accepting me still. But I'm stuck right now. Can you say that again, please? I'm sorry.
Basically, you know, from all the years that you said you've been listening to the show for a while, and so forth and so on, has it given you a level of comfort within yourself to hear us on the radio talking?
It has honestly, because I'm going to keep it real. I don't even, anybody in Maryland, D.C. or know my voice, if they know me, I don't care. But I'm going to be real for it tonight. Like, honestly, I've been suicidal or whatever. But, sometimes when I get stressed out, I love tuning in to Tenzin's Shop. I love it. Like, I love listening to it. And it takes my mind somewhere else, because sometimes I do stuff, like, out of getting high and getting drunk, and I, you know, want to hook up and do this nasty stuff, but I mean, I'm not knocking nobody that do whatever, but I'm just saying.
And that's what the show is for. You know, again, I said this from day one. A lot of people brought that up a million times. Caller, I want to say thank you, and I'm going to put you right there to the side so we can get to a couple of other callers. But the purpose of this show in the beginning, people say, oh, this show's a mess, and you support a mess and all that stuff. But that's actually just one of the many callers that have reached out to myself, reached out to Kelly, reached out to other people that were on the show or still a partner show, and tell them that it actually gives them some type of level of comfort. And I've always said it. If it can help a person within those few hours to stop doing those things that they usually do or something like that, I mean, I've said this a million times, then this show is for you. Because I know that I'm touching individuals. I know Kelly's touching individuals. I know everyone that has been a part of this show has touched a person one way or another. So I want to say thank you, Paula, for sharing that with us. And just know that you aren't alone, and you have people like us that are there, and hopefully we can help you, but you definitely need to build a very, very strong relationship with God. That is the first thing, and that should help you on your quest, on your journey, because it is a rough world out there for everyone, and, you know, you just got to do... You know, you got to be strong within yourself. And drugs and alcohol is not the answer. I know that as well. So let's go to another caller. 757-202, you're on the air.
Yeah, what's going on, everybody? I feel like this generation has lost a lot of respect. I mean, due to, you know, just because you do what you do, you don't have to be disrespectful. Everybody don't have the tendency of being gay. So therefore, like, I mean, I live a regular life. I'm a gay homosexual male, but I mean, I carry myself like a regular person. I don't really, you know, I don't conduct my say. I don't carry like a stereotype. I'm normal. The way I came out because of me and my cousin, I confided in her. It didn't work out. She told people. The men in the family didn't tend to understand. Like, the men take it harder than the women. The women, they understand, but the men don't understand. They ask a lot of questions, or how did it happen? So I just say, like, you just got to know, like, look, this me, do you want to take it? Or, I mean, have nothing at all. That's what I do, like, this me. Like, I used to be ashamed to, you know, say, look, I'm gay, but now I can lift my head up. Yo, I like dudes, but that's it. I'm a regular nigga. I mean...
So are you saying that it's not normal for someone to be flamboyant?
No, what I'm saying is that I mean, you don't have to. I mean, it doesn't have to always, like, you don't have to always, like, I see it a lot. You got to be the center of attention just because you do what you do. There's something wrong with being flamboyant, but like when you starving for attention, it looks a little desperate. Like, I don't really like all that. I don't mind. I got friends all different types. I don't mind. I mean, I don't just like a lot of attention. But if that's the way you are, that's fine. But a lot of people starve for attention. Like, they love to be the center of attention. And that's not how it's supposed to be. Just because you're gay, you don't have to act like it or be seen. That's all I'm saying. It's not nothing wrong with being flamboyant.
I think a lot of times when people first come out, they don't really know that. And they think that just being flamboyant, you know, is how they get recognized. Because I think at some point, I'm not saying you, but at some point I think we've all been through a little bit of being flamboyant when we first come out, because we think that's how it's supposed to be, unless you're trying to live that real DL lifestyle. Because until I realized that I didn't have to do that anymore, I think when I first came out, I thought it was cute to wear, you know, like tight clothes and lip gloss and, you know, whatever it was at that particular time that was in for females, it had to be a part of my repertoire. But then as I started getting in touch with who I was, I realized I didn't need all those extra things to draw people to me. And a lot of times people do things like you said, just for attention. And once they realize that they don't have to do that anymore, then they put that vice down. So I think it's just a process that people go through in order to feel accepted.
Yes, caller. Yes, you're right. And yes, caller, thank you for tuning in. I'm sorry, but I want to get to a couple of other callers really quickly. But let me check, and I think that Day's phone was disconnected.
And where's TJ?
TJ, he was in a loud background, so he said he was going to mute his phone. TJ, are you there?
Yes.
TJ? TJ? Okay, I'm not sure where he is, but I'm going to leave it right there. Let's take another call. I think this caller is from the chat room. Ty D, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, how are you?
I'm all right.
So what did you want to share with us?
Well, I wanted to share something different. It's kind of the same thing that you're talking about, like how coming out can be difficult for families and stuff. I wanted to say this earlier, but since I couldn't get through the line and I finally got through the line now, I wanted to say it now. Well, people say that it's easier to come out when you're in today's society, being that it's more openly gay, with parents being more accepting, which is not true at all. I have friends my age, which me being 20 years old, I have friends my age that I knew since we was little kids that's, like, still in the closet and still going out to the clubs and going partying and stuff. And they're just so scared to tell their families that, yeah, mom, yeah, dad, yeah, grandma, yeah, I'm gay, and this is how I'm going to live my life, because they're scared that their uncles or something is going to do something to them or hurt them, or their family's going to turn their backs on them. And it's like, it's just mad different from, you know, coming from a different nationality, you know, being that I am black, and they say that, oh yeah, being that you're black and you're gay, you can contract AIDS and, you know, all the rest of this. But being in different communities, like Hispanic communities and Guyanese communities, like, if they come out to their parents and say that, oh, yeah, mom, I'm gay and stuff, they literally disown them. They beat them up. They cut their fingers off and get them bruises and make all their cousins and uncles and nephews and brothers jump them. They literally beat them up. Like,
yeah,
it's so
hard. There is a world out there, you know.
It's so hard. It's so hard to say, because, like, in the Latino community, I noticed for a fact, they literally beat them up. I'm talking about beat them up, throw them out, boom, there's the streets. And that's where you get a lot of gay teenagers that don't know where to turn to or where to go, don't have any gay families, don't know of any programs to go to, don't know any shelters, don't know where to go. And then they think they have friends, like, and then they don't have any friends, because when they get kicked out, who can they run to? They can't run to their homegirl that they always chilling with, because her mother don't even like gays because she's into the church.
Uh-huh.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, you're
That's
right.
That's what I really
someone,
wanted to say.
Someone
I really...
just shared with us that they knew someone that went through that, and he, you know, he was a childhood friend, and he actually hung himself and committed suicide. So, you know, the message, you know, the message basically is that it is happening out there. You know, it's definitely happening out there. Someone in the chat room is posting right now, and I remembered it because it hurt my stomach. Did you ever get a chance to see the stuff that was happening in Africa?
No.
That basically they were actually posting it on, you know, YouTube and Worldstar Hip Hop, that, you know, the African gay people were actually being beaten up and burned alive, actually having actually chopped on them, and they were being set on fire, and it was actually fully being recorded. It really was, you know, people are saying it broke their heart. You know, it was sad. It's, like, literally so sad. And this happens in other countries, you know, that they...
So they do this in Trinidad. They chop your head off with a machete. You know, it's that's why people that's here in New York and the United States, they just don't realize how much freedom they have.
Yeah.
And they take
yeah.
it for granted, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if people only knew what was going on in the world outside of where they live, they would embrace the freedom that they have with their sexuality and stop going at each other.
Yeah.
At each other. Here we are beating each other up every function, having a fight with someone of the same sexuality and the same nature of you who has possibly gone through the same thing that you've gone through, when there's people around the world that wish they had the opportunity to just hang out with somebody that had the same sexual preference as them without being ridiculed.
It is. It's sad, and I want everybody that's listening to just take a moment to think about that. You know, how we argue and fuss and fight, and we go through these power struggles, and we go through this, you know, popularity contests and this competitiveness, and how we argue and we fight with each other. And there's people out there that are going through a lifestyle change, and they have to hide it, and hide it not to even be beaten, but to be killed.
But you also,
and it's so sad.
You know what else you can? I'd like to touch on, and if there's any butch queens in drag or femme queens or transgenders who can identify with this, you have people who are guys who will be on the chat line, on the straight line, and you come on and you identify yourself as a butch queen in drag or a tranny or whatever the case may be. They are on your ass like white on rice, ready to come and see you. But then when they see you on the street and they're with their peers, they're ready to knock you in the head or bash you verbally when they know at 1 o'clock in the morning they're going to be on the same chat line trying to get you to come and knock their back out. And
yeah,
that's
that's
the other part that gets me with, and that's not even, I don't even think that's a part of being DL. I think that I'd like for someone to tell me exactly what kind of man, how does he identify himself, the person who likes to mess with butch queens and drags, trannies, or femme queens, and still considers himself 100% man. I just don't get that. When he knows that he wants to live the same fantasy, because from my understanding, most of these tricks, they'd like to get plunged by female figures. And I'm just going to use that terminology for identifying with all genders of female status. As far as butch queen and drags, femme queens, and transgenders, I'm just going to say female figures for the moment, okay? So don't take it out of context. But if there's anybody listening that can actually tell me what it is that makes a man want to identify with you at night but not identify with you in the daytime, and how do you feel about that as a female figure? Do you feel that that's acceptable to you? Do you understand what I'm saying, Jasmine?
No, I understand what you're saying. I definitely understand what you're saying.
I just don't get it. And I think a lot of times we as gay people, we settle for a lot of things just to be accepted. And I don't know if that acceptance urge comes from being rejected from our families, that we settle for so much from people to be accepted, that we might be in a relationship that's abusive, or we might be in a relationship that's not conducive to what we want, or we might be in a relationship with somebody that we know is not healthy, but we have no choice but to be with that person because we don't want our family to know that this is the person that I've been with all these years, and then it's going to reflect on me, you know? It's just a lot of stuff that we live for our family, and our family could give two shits about us. And it makes no sense. That's why a lot of people, when they come out, they move to different states so that they can live their life freely.
You're right. I think we have a caller really quickly. 215-856, you're on the air.
Hello, everyone. How are you?
Hi, Tiny. How are you?
I'm good.
It's good to hear your voice.
Hi, same to you. I just actually called in. I just was listening to what you guys were saying, and The only thing I pretty much can say or add to the younger generation, they have to reach out to various organizations, because at the end of the day, if you are shunned from your families, it does get better, and taking your life, that's not the way to go. It does get better.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, and I was just listening to what you were saying, RR, in reference to the guys and stuff, who mess with the girls and all that kind of stuff like that. I think for that particular situation, I hope girls of a certain age are not doing that now. But I know, I'm going to speak for myself, like in the beginning of my, you know, transition, I might have accepted that in the beginning, in the very beginning. But now, no, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not using that.
Let me ask you something. Was it hard for you to come out to your family?
In the beginning, well, see, this the thing is for me, my family pretty much knew that I was gay. So they, my grandmother raised me, because my parents were both deceased. My father died in the service, and my mother died in a house fire when I was about 12. So my grandmother raised us, and for me, the whole gay thing wasn't a big deal. It was the transition. That was the big thing. So what I did was, I know some people, like I said, I think I told you guys this before, this story. Like what I did with my family was I cut my entire family off for a whole entire year, including my grandmother. And I needed time to figure out, was this something that I really wanted to do? Did I really wanted to take this big step into going into being a young lady? So I
have
to really...
Tiny, I'm sorry for one second. I have to step away. You guys can talk. RR, I'm going to bring J-Rock back on because I think he wants to talk as well. But go ahead and J-Rock, you're back. But let Tiny finish on with her story, and I will
mm-hmm.
be right back. I have to take an emergency phone call.
All right.
Go ahead, you guys.
Yeah, so as I was saying, in the beginning, like, you know, it was, you know, I had to cut my entire family off for a year and do me. And this was like after I had done graduated high school and everything. And
can we back up right there? Your transition in high school, when you were in high school, were you already did you have feminine qualities while you were in high school?
Oh yeah,
characteristics.
I was real flamey in high school, but I didn't have any issues and stuff like that. Like, you know, like I had really good friends and stuff like that. So, like in reference to my family, I didn't have any issues like being ostracized or anything like that coming from my family.
It's because you were always feminine?
You know what, to be honest with you, I never really thought about it. I never thought about it, to be honest with you. But I know once I made that transition, that's when the shade came. And it was like, well, why would you want to do that? And why would you want to go that far? And I told them, I said, well, this is something that I think, you know, I think that's where I'm going. So I told my grandmother, I said, I think, you know, this is what I feel like I need to be doing at this particular moment or what have you. So I need to do me. So, like I said, I cut my entire family off, my brothers and everything, off for a whole year. And I never forget, my grandmother had been asking, you know, for me or what
mm-hmm.
have you, because we had a lot of, like, older gay guys and stuff in my neighborhood who knew my family because I got a really big family. So they, you know, they had asked where I was and what have you. And my grandmother had told me, she was sending messages and everything, telling me that, you know, she missed me and she wanted to see me. And I was like, not right now. So we had a family reunion, and by this time, you know, I was already on hormones and done group breasts and all this other stuff and all that. So I came to the family reunion. By this time, I had done got my name changed, everything, all the works.
Now, as you were going through your transition, you were more concerned about what you wanted for you and not what your family would expect.
Yeah, it was definitely for me. Yeah, it wasn't even about with the family at all. My grandma, like I said, when I got to my family reunion, and anybody who knows me, like Jay, he knows me very well. He knows my family. It's a few people in the ballroom scene that know, so they know that this story, and they know that I'm telling the truth about this story. And I went to my family cookout, and my grandmother and my brothers and my sister and everybody just stopped and looked. And was like staring. So I was, I was like, I'm not gonna lie to you guys. I was a little uncomfortable for the moment. So my grandmother said, "Oh, I can see that there's been a change." And I said, "Yes." And she said, "So we're not gonna call you that. So what should we call you?" And I said, "Tanya." And I showed her my driver's license, and she says, "Oh, okay." And she said, you have your own place? I said, yes, I do. She said, how is things? I said, everything is well. And she said, okay, from this day forth, you will be Tanya. And I've never had any more issues from my entire family since then.
Wow. Isn't that something?
And yeah. And sometimes some people, people who know me or see me, sometimes when they see me, like, some people might look at me like, I might walk like with my own. They might think I'm like kind of stuck up or something, but it's not so much that I'm stuck up, but I'm so confident because everyone out on the streets I could care less about because I got love and support from home. You know what I mean? So what somebody else think or say about me doesn't even matter. And I think sometimes, for the younger generation, either for the girls who are going through transition or either just the young gay men, sometimes maybe it could be in your delivery or something like that. Maybe, they need to sit down and speak to, their family, like their parents or what have you or whoever raised them. Because it's all in your approach and it's how you do things. And don't get me wrong, RR, back then in the early 90s, like, it killed me every day because I was very close with my grandmother, but it killed me, to cut my own grandmother off and not speak to her for a whole year. But that was something that I had to do for myself.
And she didn't know if you were living or dead?
She knew I was living, but she didn't know exactly where I was living. You know, I had to move out, got my own apartment, but I just needed time to, like, do me and figure out if this is the right path that I want to go down. And it worked out.
Do you think she would have discouraged you if you had told her early on and you may have listened to her instead of following your own feelings?
You know what? I don't know. Like, the funny thing is because, like I said, we had a lot. I mean, the neighborhood that I grew up in, it was a lot of older. Do you remember Ralph? Ralph that used to be with Derek Prada when they was Armani.
Yeah.
Ralph was from my neighborhood. I grew up with Ralph and all of them. And, Ralph that Vogue's and stuff. And, like I said, we had a lot of gay people in my neighborhood, but my grandmother was always cool with all of them. And, they used to always look at me because I was the youngest one in the neighborhood, but I was gay at the same time.
You've always, not to cut you off, but you've always had a lot of confidence within yourself. Because I can always go back to that first time you came to that ball and you were so confident. When I looked at you and I said, what are you? are you, and you said blah, blah, blah. And I was like, all right. And you came to the ball with that black and white, with the black patent leather and the white blouse and the gloss slips and the Chanel bag. And that was you. And you walked the streets like that. And you couldn't have been no more than, what, 15 or 16?
I was about 17, 18 back then.
Exactly. And your confidence level was so high.
But, and also, too, even back then, my grandmother, she used to always say, you know, when I used to walk the balls and stuff like that, and she would say, oh, well, where you going? And I said, oh, well, we going to New York. She said, where you going, to one of your fashion shows? And I said, yeah, we going to a fashion show tonight. And she said, oh, well, good luck. And she said, win me a trophy or what have you. So we used to, like, laugh and stuff like that. But
and you
I
would
like
walk out the house just the way you came to the ball.
Exactly, just like that.
And get on the PATH train and everything.
I get on the, we would take the, if we didn't drive, you know, at that time when I was in the House of Excellence, we would take, what is it, the R7 in New Jersey Transit.
Mm-hmm.
I would take, that's how I would come to New York
wow.
We'll take Amtrak, but that's how I did it. But, you know, like I said, you know, my story is not going to be everybody's
exactly.
story, but for me, it's a beautiful story, and is at the end of the day, like, it worked out for me.
J-Rock, let me ask you a question. Do you think because of the confidence that Tiny displayed in her facial expressions, it allowed her to get through with society as far as at that young age being able to freely walk down the street by herself many times without being, I don't know if she was gay verbally bashed or not, because you didn't speak on that.
No,
but
I've never been verbally or physically bashed.
And do you think it had a lot to do with your confidence and people would look at you in a way where they knew that you were sure of who you were?
I think that has a lot to do with it also, too. And also, I think it also, you know, even though I was flamy, but I still always carried myself in, like, a more calm, you know, relaxed
demeanor, right.
Yeah,
right. Your demeanor was always calm.
Yeah.
J-Rock, when you came out, what type of demeanor did you have?
Well, to tell you the truth, when I came out, like you said, a lot of people have to move away from where they're from in order to feel like they're out. So one thing that I like that she said, and I think a lot of parents should, if there are parents online to hear, a lot that had to do with her confidence was, she said she didn't care what nobody thought because the support from the family. When that support from the family is very strong, so she could be who she wanted to be. And when you have self-confidence, it shows. And maybe she wasn't getting clocked just for the simple fact that she wasn't walking out. I mean, I believe in negative energy, and if you're expecting somebody to bash or if you're expecting somebody, it's going to happen. But when you got that confidence of, I don't care who sees me, I'm me, and I'm going to be me, it's not going to happen. So I think they need to listen to that and support their kids. But with me, like I said, when I left home at 18 and going into the military, and, you know, we had the don't ask, don't tell and all that. So, I mean, I went out with all my shipmates, you know what I'm saying, and I went out with all my boys.
Were you aware of your sexuality when you were in the Navy?
Well, there are.
Were you aware of your sexuality when you were in the Navy?
Not when. I'm still in. But, I was aware of it, but the thing about it was by the time I became aware of it, you know, growing up in that Southern, you know, Church of God in Christ and everything, I still didn't want to accept it. And when you're in denial, you find yourself in situations that you did not really want to be in, and that's like, because you're in denial and you're not comfortable with yourself, you don't want nobody to know who you are, and I had to duck off a lot. I have to leave my shipmates a lot to duck off to feel that I was gay. So I found myself in areas I had no business in for the simple fact that was the only way I could get to being gay. So when I finally came out, what made me have confidence in who I was, like I said, I had a good supporting lover that, you know, gave me confidence. And going to New Orleans, being away from Dallas, me coming from Dallas, when I came out of New Orleans, I told my family, and I didn't want to come back home. I didn't want to come back home because in New Orleans, they're straight environment in New Orleans. They're so used to gay down in New Orleans. Because as long as you're not messing with the boys or anything like that, they don't pay you no attention. You know, it's just like, hey, what's going on? They might say fag, or either might, oh, that's a fag like that, but they don't care. And if you say fag, the next boy's going to say, why are you worried about that fag? You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of
exactly.
like, it's not saying that it's accepted in New Orleans, it's just that look where you are. You come out of New Orleans, you're on Bourbon Street, you see breastfeeds everywhere, everything is accepted.
It's
you
basically
know, so,
like if you go to Atlanta, you know what to expect.
Exactly.
If you're a straight person and you go to Atlanta, don't walk through Lenox Mall acting like this is new to you. You knew what to expect when you came to Lenox Mall.
Exactly, and that's the way it was in New Orleans for me. So when I came out, it made me confident because even though, and this is funny, even though I was confident in the gay scene and it's good to be confident when you know that you have a career paying you on the 1st and the 15th, and then you see all these other queens and, you know, going and trying to live from house to house and all this stuff, and you're like, I'm 22 in my own house, my own car, can't nobody tell me nothing. So I felt good to know that I was still doing the right thing, yet getting my life at night. So that's what made me confident, knowing that I can still do the right thing and, you know, still be in charge and stuff. But then at nighttime, I'm shaking down, you know, to the bounce music or whatever. But then when I, you know, by the time it was time for me to leave New Orleans, I realized I had to come face back home to Dallas. And, Lord, that's when all that other stuff started coming out. So.
Now, you touched on something. I want to ask Tiny, are you still with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Were you always self-supporting as far as when you left home?
My brothers and stuff like that, you know, they always looked out for me. But I always had a job and, you know, my brothers, you know, they was hustlers and all that kind of stuff like that, you know, back in the early 90s and stuff
right.
like that. So they made sure I was okay. But then also, too, I want to touch on something that sweetie, would you say your name was J-Rock?
Yes.
What did he say his name was?
Yeah, J-Rock.
J-Rock. Yeah. Now, because, you know, I also grew up in the church also, too. And the thing is with that church, I can remember my church made me feel so uncomfortable years ago. I remember we was having church service or what have you, and for some reason I was just sitting there, you know, going through the service, and for some reason they felt the need to come to me and they wanted to pray for me, and I'm like,
oh my God.
So I felt like this burning sensation, like I felt this burn, I was sweating and everything, because I was like, okay, well, why are you just singling me out? So, and I was like, well, are they trying to pray the gay away or something? I was like, well, what is going on? You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I went on up there and I let them pray or what have you. And so they was like, well, how do you feel after everything was over? I said, I feel fine. You know, I'm sanctified and everything. I believe in God and everything like that. But I'm still going to be me, and I'm not going to change. And I said, you know, the first thing what kills me with churchgoers is thou shalt not judge. And there's no sin greater or less than. And, you know, I don't know if you go home and drink a fifth of liquor. So, and that's sin. So, you know what I mean? And I find that sometimes also, too, in the church, they have a tendency of, especially in black churches, too, they have a tendency of making gay people feel uncomfortable or ostracizing them, or somebody will get up and start speaking or what have you about homosexuality or what have you. And like nowadays when I go to churches and they start talking about that, I immediately just, I put my little one finger up, my index finger up, and excuse myself, because I don't want to hear that. I come to church, you know, for love. I don't
exactly.
come here to be
you come there
know,
to get your spirit filled to make it
yeah,
feel weak. You don't come there to get your spirit beaten down.
No.
You know, but I find a lot of churches now are more accepting.
They are. They
because
are.
Because
they
realize. Yeah, but they have to come around because they have to realize that, you know, half of the congregation, if they're not DL, they're openly gay, you know. And it's not like, you know, we don't all serve the same God,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Exactly. And that DL stuff, like, I mean, that was, that. I think, I mean, you know, I don't know.
That's
I'm
something
sure.
I can't identify with because.
Yeah, that's so
to each
like.
To its own.
That's
but
so, like,
I just feel like until you free yourself and accept who you are and you tell another person, this is who I am, take it or leave it, you're not fully living your truth.
No, not at all. And like
now, J-Rock, I know, how do you feel about that, what I just said?
I'm going to tell you something about this, that. The only way that you are DL to me, and like I always say, when I'm talking about from J-Rock, what I feel. The only way you're DL to me, you don't have a social network. You don't have anything. Because let me tell you what happened to me. And I ain't going to say who it was because I promised them that I would never say
mm-hmm.
it. And they're my,
okay.
That's on that they're my family. So I want, you know, my real blood family, and it's, I don't want it to come out. But we went. They said, I want to go to the club. They said, I want to go to the club with you. So I was like, okay, well, you do know it's a gay club. Yeah, but I just want to go because you seem like you have a good time. We get to the club, and when we get to the club, I'm like, I've been out for a while. Everybody know who J-Rock is. How do everybody know who you are? When I tell you, every little young queen in that club was like, why? Oh, my God. So then I asked, how do you know them? BGC, A for A. Urban chat, all this stuff. If you are supposed to be so DL, if you're on the online and you're on these social networks, you're no longer DL.
Mm-hmm.
You're more open than somebody that goes out to a club because everybody knows you, and you know how we are in the gay community. Oh, I had this boy that was white or tall. I had him. And then it just goes around.
Right.
You're no longer DL. You might as well come to the club and kiki with the rest of the girls.
Exactly.
And then
and
if you are a real DL person that's not on the social network and you're still like back in the 90s before all this, I just think that being DL is, it kind of goes back to what you said with the people that go with you, because it's more than just the female figures. It's also the butch queens out there too. They'll go out with you at night and stuff. That's why I don't like trade and supposedly gay gangster stuff. That stuff is fake to me because I grew up in South Dallas in the late 80s, early 90s. You're not gangster. But that stuff is dangerous. I always teach the younger generation that's gay, it's not good to mess with people that's going to be with you at night but act like they don't know you in the daytime. Those
but
are
you know what I could say to that is because I, quote unquote, only associate with so-called straight guys.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my thing is, though, is I'm not going to just have you behind closed doors and we can't walk to the grocery store together, or if you're coming to see me, I can't meet you at the train station because you don't know how to get here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not falling for all that. If you can't be seen in public with me, then there's something wrong with this picture. Every straight guy that I've ever dealt with, and that's all I've ever dealt with, I've turned boys out. That's my drug of choice, turning boys out. But they're going to walk down the street with me, and you're not going to have me walk two steps behind you or two steps in front of you. You're not going to tell me, is anybody in the hallway? Okay, open the door, I'm going to run in. No, it's not that kind of party. You know, because at the end of the day, I still have my integrity. You understand? And I think a lot of boys who are DL, the only reason they claim that they're DL is because they're not comfortable with themselves. And if you're not comfortable with yourself, then you need to evaluate who you really are, because you're living a false truth. And it has nothing to do with your sexual partner. It has something to do with you as a person. Because a lot of times people think that nobody knows, but people know. How many times, Tiny and J-Rock, can you sit on a train and look at a boy in the eye and not tell that he's DL? I don't care how hard they try, because we are ball goers. I don't know if J-Rock, are you a ball goer?
J-Rock, go ahead, J-Rock. Listen,
I have
to get to a couple of other calls.
Go ahead,
J-Rock.
No, but like I said, I am a ball goer, but it goes before being in the ball. That's just that gaydar. You know when somebody...
That's what I'm... No, I'm using that as an example. If you can sit down there and judge a realness category and a schoolboy realness category, when you get into the real world, you can judge it the same way.
Exactly.
So we know. Tiny, if a boy came up to you and he said, I think you're cute, I'd like to go out with you, and you go out with him and you look at his manicure, then you look at his eyebrows, what are you going to say? And you're going to leave it alone, right?
Mm-hmm. I'm the first time, you know me, I'm going to look him up and down and be like, excuse me, but first of all, who are you? I'm going to check him out, first of all. I'm going to give him like that look and do the,
So there's not so much DL that, you know, they can really pull over our eyes. They're fooling their family, but they're not fooling anybody else. And that's the point I'm trying to make. We can fool our families to a degree, and then there's some of us that our family already know. But at the end of the day, for you young people who are out there, you have to find, like Tiny said, the right time and the way to let them know about you. And timing is definitely everything. You really have to pick your timing, you know, and you have to be sure when you tell your family that I'm gay, that you're sure about coming out.
Yeah,
well, let me ask you, Tiny, and
what's that?
A lot of the questions and topics and things we talked about were pertaining to coming out and the young, you know, the younger generation themselves. But what do you say, especially Tiny and RR, what do you say to the older generation? Now, not even older, but the older ones, late 20s. Mid-20s, late-20s, even the ones in their 30s, that still to this day, after all these years of coming out, they are actually living their life, have, you know, had relationships, you know, gay relationships. They live their life. They're openly gay. And yet, the mother, the father, the sisters, the brothers are still using the terminology around them of fag, or constantly throwing in their face, well, it must be because you're gay. Well, you know you're still going to hell because you're gay. Well, this is happening because you're gay. What do you say to them? You know, is it still happening in your life? And what do you say to them that are older, not even teenagers? They still hear this after all these years, after that individual has proven to their family, no, I'm, you know, it's not what you always thought. No, all gay people aren't the same. No, I still am smart. I still have a job. I'm still loving and caring. But yet, the family still throws it in their face.
You want me to speak or you want our artist?
No, go ahead.
No, you're good.
Okay. Now, that right there, you know how I get. I'm sure you see all my posts on Facebook and stuff like that. You know I go into activism in a minute.
Yeah.
But, like, for me, I can't tolerate that type of ignorance. And just it's crazy that you just spoke on that, because the other day, which is one of my cousins, it's a female cousin of mine, me and her, we like sisters, like really cool. And she told me, she was on the train, and she was like, oh, my God. She was like, Tanya, you know what? I seen these, excuse my French, but I saw these faggots. I said, don't say that. I said, why would you say that?
Mm-hmm.
I said, that's so derogatory. I said, so at the end of the day, whether you want to look at me as Tanya or the other name before, what have you, I said, when you say that, I mean, people – back in the day, or, you know, have called me that name. I said, so why would you want to use such a derogatory name, such as that, when you describing someone? And I said, don't say that. That's not nice or what have you. And she was like, Oh, yeah. She said, no, not you. I said, no. But I said, but at the end of the day, I still fall under that umbrella. And she was like, oh, God, here we go. Because they know how I get, and I goes in and I goes hard. But the thing is you some when you hear people, especially like people that you're friends with or people that and people in your family speaking negatively like that, you have to check them, and then you have to tell them, how would you like if I call you a cunt or a slut or a bitch or what have you? Like, how would you like me to say something derogatory towards you? You wouldn't like that or what have you. So, you know, everybody deserves some respect at the end of the day, and respect don't cost anything. I said, it would have been a better way to say that. Well, I saw these two gay people the other day and blah, 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 blah. I said, but calling them a faggot, I said, what did that, I said, that sounds so awful.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to give you guys a little story. I'm going to tell you guys a little story. RR, you pretty much know this about me, but you do know that, you know, for a couple of years, I raised my biological brother from the age of 13 when my mom passed. And raising a child, you know, definitely raising a teenager, you know, and being around his friends, I was always, you know, his big sister. You know, none of his friends knew anything about me. And basically growing up, you know, him growing up in my household, you know, 16, 17, you know, so forth, so on, you know, his friends would come by, and as they're doing things and keying and laughing and, you know, playing video games and getting online and doing things, you know how boys get around each other, they start talking, and, you know, they start using, you know, oh, fuck you, man, nigga, da-da-da-da-da. And then a lot of the terminology that would come out of their mouth was faggot. Ah, you a fag, you a fag, you a fag. And I remember how my brother, because, you know, of course my brother knows about me, my brother would not allow that to happen in the house, outside of the house, or anything like, don't use that, don't say that. And his friends never understood why, you know, he was trying to defend the word faggot. You know, like, don't say that. And that's my brother being very protective. And, again, they didn't know about me. But, yet, you know, he wouldn't allow them to use this terminology. And my point is that I remember clearly one day, this one of the boys that he was real close with, you know, he had a car. And down the street from our house was a small, you know, gay club that catered to, you know, white guys and stuff. And one night, a guy left the club, and he was drunk. And my brother's friend's car was in front of the house. And the guy that was driving from the club was so drunk, he crashed into my brother's car. And we were all sitting there, and we heard a big, loud bang. And when we ran outside, the guy got out of the car. He was stumbling, and he was drunk, but he was trying to run away because he didn't want the cops to find out he was driving drunk. And pretty much totaled my brother's friend's car. But as they were trying to hold him back, he was a queen. So he's queening out like, you know, da-da-da-da-da. And I remember clearly my brother's friend saying, because his car got totaled, See what I mean about those faggots? Some damn faggots, faggots this, faggots that. And my brother was just kind of stuck. He couldn't know what to say. And I just was like, wow, you know, that is so crazy. And this is what straight society was labeling us as, and they used this one incident to try to prove their point. Faggot this, faggot that. Even though, of course, they had nothing to do. His sexuality had nothing to do with him driving drunk, but mm-hmm. This is what they were seeing. And my brother was just in a state of shock, like, what am I supposed to do? This man's car just got totaled. You know, Jasmine, I'm just, wow, you know, amazed. So I just thought I would just share that with you. It was just like a real crazy incident. And I just sat there like in a gag nation.
But don't you think sometimes also when people use that term, not only that they're using it in a derogatory manner, but they're using it because they think it's going to hurt you. So,
a lot of people do that as well,
Yeah, so...
But you know what? No, I'll take that back a little bit. I do know, like, I've heard, you know, even with my boyfriend, I've heard him talk to his, you know, biological family. He has two other sisters. And one of his sisters would be like, guess who I seen? You know that bag that you used to hang with? You know that bag? You know, and he would be like, ugh. Like, you could see in his face the way he would roll his eyes, like, ugh. And I'm like, what's wrong? And like, they're trying that bag shit again. Just trying to explain to me somebody I haven't seen in a long time. And the first thing that comes out of their mouth is the word bag. And it wasn't to hurt him. It was just their way of trying to remind him of who that was. So I seen your fag friend, you know, who lives in building so-and-so, he was asking about you.
He should say at that point, he should say, I appreciate you telling me that, but the next time you have to describe one of my friends, can you say I saw one of your gay friends earlier today?
I saw one of your friends. Like, why do you have
right.
to use bag? Because I'm not going to say to you, you know what? I was on the train, and what's that bitch that you used to hang with? What's her name? You're not going to say that to describe her friend like that.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So, come on now.
Mm-hmm.
I just think, like, when you know better, you do better.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I want to bring up is, and TJ, you are there. You can always speak whenever you want. But with Tiny and RR, I want to bring up something else as far as, you know, coming out of the closet, you know, the gay life and stuff. We talked a lot about family and even close to friends. But what effect do you feel that it affects? Well, let me say that again. How do you feel it also affects a person's education and their career? And that's also a major part because as we see right now, there are a lot of people in our, you know, community and in our ballroom scene that have given up on school. They've given up on their education. And a lot of people also haven't chose a career or had the means or, you know, have been able to get jobs, or, you know, they live the fast life of we talked about this before in one of the shows, you know, doing so many illegal stuff that it's hard for them to get a job when they want to. Or we have our transgenders in our community that it's hard for some of them as well to get a job, and a lot of people run to the life of escorting or prostitution or fast money as a means of survival. So how do you feel the gay life affects a person's education and career? Back in the day, like you said, RR, it was a taboo to talk about. So now you had to go through school and, your whole education process, being in a closet, not letting anyone know. But nowadays, they have gay-friendly schools. Like you said, with shows like Glee and a lot of the shows on TV, you know, it's more open, so it really shouldn't affect the education process of people now, but it still does because we still have bullying and stuff in school. But what do you guys feel about education and jobs and stuff with the gay lifestyle?
I think, first of all,
go ahead, TJ.
Okay. Come from someone who was younger dealing with that. Personally, my views of it is it depends on the person. If you can maintain it and handle it and do it, it's not that hard to do because I went through school, college and everything, got a good job. It's really not as bad as everyone thinks it is. Once you get into it and really keep the mindset going, it flows very easily. Some jobs are not meant for people of the homosexual lifestyle, and if they can't handle the job, don't be it. Like, if you notice, majority of butch queens that are homosexual now, if you look at the areas they work in, they work in, like, flight attendants, hotels, restaurants, customer service, retail, things like that. There are certain areas that it's easier for us to work in because we're dealing with society and where it's more acceptable at compared to, let's say, are going to work at GM. Of course, he might get more ridicule and stuff there from the quote-unquote iron typical man from back in the 60s who don't believe in it, who's still sitting on the line today.
And also to add to that, I'm going to speak from one of the girls' perspective.
Sorry, hold on for me for 1 second. Chat room, and if you're listening from your computer, there is 1 minute left into the show, so please pick up the phone and call in 347-215-6820. If you guys are on the line, try not to hang up. Also, the switchboard has been acting super funny tonight, so hopefully the call will not get disconnected in the next 5 minutes, in the next minute or so. But if we do get disconnected for some reason, I do apologize, and we may continue with our topic later on, maybe next week or so. But hopefully it won't get disconnected, but it's just acting really funny. So call in really quickly, and if you're on the phone line, please don't hang up because you won't be able to get back on. But go ahead, Tanya, and give us your perspective.
From one of the girls, speaking from a girl's perspective, I think nowadays, like maybe back in the day, it might have been a little bit harder. And when I speak to a lot of the girls here in Philly that's like in their 50s and 60s and stuff like that, they've had so many different types of jobs, either working in nursing, or I know one of the girls here, she runs the post office in Center City here in Philly, or what have you. So it's a lot of older girls that have a lot of jobs. But the thing is like nowadays it is a lot more easier. And for the girls, I understand, I'm one of the girls, I get it, we like our fast money, this and that, blah, blah, blah. But, at the end of the day, we can go out there and get our high school diplomas, and we can go out there and get a real job because, like TJ said, you could get a job at Mac, you can get a job in retail. It's so many different jobs. You can work at one of the nonprofit organizations or what have you. So you don't have to like put yourself in a box and just become a whore all your life, because the thing is the clients are only going to want you but for so long anyway. So, after that falls through, what are you going to do? You know what I mean? So you can't, you got to kind of like motivate yourself and say, you know what? Okay, I did that in the beginning stages of my life. Now that I'm going towards the middle part of my transition or what have you in my life or what have you, you know what, let me go out there and see what's out there or what have you and submit some resumes or what have you, because a lot of laws have been passed, to protect you from discrimination and what have you. And don't sell yourself so short. Like, get on out there and get a job or what have you.
I will say this, even like with the trip that we had this weekend to Miami and Fort Lauderdale area, I think that you are right. We have a lot of companies out there now that do cater to the girls and stuff like that, and people can't get jobs. But, what? One of the biggest problems sometimes is not even the company itself. It's still society. And the fact that these people have to be around, I'm just using retail or something, where they have to make face-to-face contact with a lot of different people, and they're judged and ridiculed and stuff. And, like, when we went to Florida, when we went to Fort Lauderdale, and I had actually met up with the group, and everybody was jet skiing. After everybody came back from jet skiing and stuff, I had met up with them while they were on the water, so I had to wait for them to get back. And when they did get back, there was like a little van that had maybe about two or three different couples, guys and girls and stuff in the van. And, everybody was still kind of reading the van, the people in the van. And I'm like, well, what happened? Why am I reading? They was like, yeah, as soon as we got here and stuff, they told me all this bag this and bag that. And disguise this, and you know, and you know, they kind of they said it to the wrong group. You had a whole bunch, you know, Bush friends and you know Kelly and all them, and you know they loud, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's like as soon as the queen start calling, you know, as soon as the straight people calling them bad, and so they all got together and started reading them. They got on their bands and closed the door and locked the door and rolled up the windows and stuff. But this is, you know, this is what people still have to say. You know, yeah, Neiman Marcus is going to hire me. Saks is going to hire me, but the customers are still going to ridicule me. And this is why I still do not want to go out there and work in society, because I just cannot deal with, you know, being called a fag constantly.
Let me tell you something on that note. I don't care where you go, how long you wait, or how long you think it's going to take. It's never going to change. We're always going to be fags to anybody who's insecure about their own being. Anybody who looks at us or who feels jealous of us, that's what they're going to say. Don't let that hinder you from going out there and pursuing a career, an education, or anything that's going to make you a better person. Who do you think runs the industry? Gays. Who do you think runs the food chains? Gays. When you really think about it, how many times have you heard conversations where straight people have said, those gays really got it together, though. They're gay, but those gays, they be doing it. The gays got this and the gays got that. But guess what? That's what they're jealous of, the fact that we get it.
Well, a lot of girls, actually, you know, straight women, like to get their hair done by gay men, you know, like to get their makeup done by gay men. So, you know,
exactly. Look how long I worked in a hair salon. 14 years I did hair. Me, Al, all of us, we stood next to each other. And even God bless the dead, my daughter Tracy. She was real as rain. She worked in a hair salon rather than do an ad, she worked in a hair salon to pay for her sex change. And, you know, I give the girls credit. Even the girls who work ads, they do it for a purpose, for a reason. And once they serve that purpose and that reason, then they leave it alone and they get into society. Because a lot of times you have to do what you have to do to get to where you want to go. But once you get there, you have to have a purpose. It's like drug dealers. They claim they only sell drugs for a little while, but then they get caught up. And I think that's what happens along the way with these girls and that quick money. You know, you get caught up, and you keep telling yourself, I don't want to do this the rest of my life. But before you know it, life has passed you by.
Mm-hmm.
I think once you reach a certain plateau of success as far as your physical being is concerned, you have to say, okay, I've gotten everything I wanted done. I have the work done. I'm complete where I need to be complete. Let me venture out into the real world now and do me.
And
a lot of girls are afraid to do that.
And you know what else also, too, to add to that, you cannot escape ignorance, because ignorance is just a part of culture, and it's always going to be there. But if you were strong enough, especially for the girls, if you were strong enough to make that transition from male to female, sweetie, you can overcome anything that's being thrown at you, especially when it's just verbally thrown at you or what have you, and you take what they saying as a negative and you turn that into a positive and you walk with your head up and keep it moving or what have you. But, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say that, you know, act like I didn't entertain and stuff like that before, because I've done it too, you know what I mean? But I knew at some point that in my life that I didn't want that no more. Like, it was like been there, done that, and it's time to move on. And I love getting up in the morning and going to work and coming home.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? You feel like you're a part of society. You're contributing to the economy and to society.
Let me ask you this. Do you think sometimes a lot of the girls, they try it, they say, you know what, I don't want to work, you know, the ads anymore, I'm going to get me a job. And then they try it. And they may get a job in a hair salon, or they may get a job as a salesperson in a store. But because the customers that keep walking by, or if, say, for instance, they're doing retail, and they got a retail job, they're working in the woman's department as a woman, but they're not complete yet. But, you know, They have papers. And the real cunts come in there and give them grief. Do you think that's another reason why they'll just say, you know what, fuck this work shit?
You know what, I could see how that could be a deterrent, but at the, like I said again, if they going through their transition, and hopefully if the girls are out and about like that, and they walking out, getting their hair done, getting their nails done, I'm hoping that they somewhat real anyway. But even if they're not, do you? Like, who cares what somebody think or say about you?
It's rough, though. It's definitely rough out there, and it depends, like you're saying, you need to do you, and who cares about what people say about you, but sometimes it just depends on a person, you know, how much they can take, because sometimes it's just really, really hard, and a lot of people can't take it. You know, it's just not for everyone.
I can see what you're saying, Jasmine, and I can see where it can be stressful. Because, like, this morning, I was on the train on my way to work, and I didn't know the song that, I guess it was like, it was two girls and one guy, and they were singing, I don't know if it was, they were singing something like Nicki Minaj or whatever they were singing, but they, all three of them, they was having them a good time this morning on the train, and they were singing the songs, and it was two guys sitting in front of me on the train, and I knew that the two of them were straight, but I could actually see the three that were sitting together, the two girls with the guy, and the guy, he was gay, and they were singing the song, and the two guys looked at each other and started laughing. So they turned to me, and he was like, so he turned around to me, and he said, yo, sis, he was like, you see this? And I said, see what? And he said, you see that dude over there? And I said, oh, well, what's wrong with him? He was like, you don't see him. But I knew what he was trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
So I said to him, I said, do you know him personally? And he said, no. Why you say that? Does he have some kind of effect on your personal life? I said, let him do him. I said, it don't cost you anything. Mind your business.
I know that's right.
And he looked at me. He said, you're right. You have a good day, sis. I said, you too. Have a good day. And, you know, and I think sometimes when we see things out in public, even if it's somebody gay, now, he was gay, and I'm gay, and he doesn't know me, and I don't know him, but I felt the need to stick up for him, and he was just sitting there having a good time singing a rap song or what have you with his little girlfriends and stuff or what have you. And I think sometimes when you check people in a diplomatic way, you know, it makes them kind of think. Because I know what he was trying to say, like, yo, look at the faggot boy or what have you. You know what I'm saying?
And then the thing about it was, he was putting himself on blast, but he didn't even know that you were part of the same family that he was trying to put on blast.
Exactly, and I didn't find it funny, like, and,
exactly.
You know, and I don't get me wrong, I was looking at, you know, the two girls and the little gay guy. I mean, they were singing the songs, and the hands were snapping, and the neck was going and everything, and I was like, well, all right, or what have you, you know, but, you know, I paid it, or what have you, but, you know, when the two guys started falling out laughing, I was like, oh, God, I said, and then he gonna turn around, yo, sis, you see that? I'm like, see what? You know, you got to, because you got to make them feel stupid, like for real. And
exactly.
Then I think,
why are you pointing that out to me? You don't have nothing better to do.
And you know what? Also, too, in the workplace, too, sometimes some of the girls also, they get even shade even from gay guys within the community.
Oh, my God, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
You know what I mean? It don't even be the strings. It be they.
Our own will shade us.
Yeah, they get shade. Yeah, we get shade from our own. Cause don't get me wrong, I've gotten shade in the beginning too. I've had gay guys. You know that's the dude, right? And you'd be like, are you serious?
They try to put you in class.
Yeah,
and you know, and you know, like where, in my apartment in New York, right? There's a neighbor that lives over me, and she just moved there from Atlanta. And she and I had a conversation because I'm the president of the Tenants Association of that building. And anyway, make a long story short, she's very noisy. So one night I had to go up there and knock on her door to ask her not to make so much noise over my head. And she swung that door open, and she said, you have no right knocking on my door. I don't know who you think you are, faggot.
Oh no.
She said, "But you need to get away. But you need to get away from my door." I said, "You know what? Now I know why your husband left you for another woman, because you weren't woman enough to even identify the fact that your husband was a faggot. But at the end of the day, this faggot, on this day, you got the right one." That bitch went to her house, got some mace, and started to spray me with mace.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
But she didn't get the chance. When I saw the can, she started to squirt it, and I, like, made an exit to the stairwell, and she continued to say, "Come back here, faggot," and all the doors start opening and everything. And at that point, I was really offended. So I called the cops. The cops came and everything, and they went upstairs, and they spoke with her. And do you know what they told me when they came back downstairs? They said, "Okay, she has the right to protect her home because you went up there and knocked on her door. I would just suggest if you have a problem with her, just take it to management. Don't knock on her door anymore." I said, "Well, I want to make a report because she called me a faggot and she was being very racial, and I felt that it was a prejudice done to me." They said, "Come on now. What do you want us to do about that?" I said, "Do your job." They said, "Did she hit you?" I said, "No, she tried to spray me with mace. If I would have tried to spray her with mace, y'all would take this faggot in, wouldn't y'all?" And the two of them looked at each other and said, "You both can resolve this on your own. I'm sure y'all are both mature enough to handle it." But the point I'm trying to make is when she moved into the building and she had to come to the tenants board to get approved, and I was the one that had to approve her, she was very nice to me, this faggot. But the minute I had to address her, she threw that in my face. So you see, no matter what we do in life, they're always going to identify us with that word because
mm-hmm.
that's the only word they can use that can do damage to us. And we allow that word to have power. That's like our trigger.
Let's see what a couple of these callers have to say. They've been waiting for a minute. And like I said, the switchboard is acting really funny, so they're finally refreshed, and I can see their numbers. I don't usually like to take private callers, but I am going to take a private caller, taking your private calls tonight in reference to the topic, because maybe people just don't want, you know, who they are out there. So, private caller, you're on the air.
Good listening.
Okay. The next caller is 937-718. You're on the air.
Hey, everyone. How are you?
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm blessed. I just want to say, first of all, I'm really enjoying these members being so chose. Like, they really are inspiring, and it's just a breath of fresh air. But in reference to the topic, I have been down some of those same roads. Before my transition, being a feminine butch queen, working in a department store, dealing with customers, and, you know, it was a woman's department store, and it was kind of like half and half. You know, you get the females that love to have, you know, the little gay guy help them try on clothes and, you know, tell them they're fat and all of that stuff. And then you have the ones that kind of try it and, you know, they don't want you to let them in the dressing room and things of that nature. So you kind of just got to take the good with the bad. But as I started to transition, it kind of didn't change much. Like Tanya said, you know, you would hope that if you're walking around, you're a little bit real and not as sloppy. So I really didn't have that many issues. But like she said, I did have an issue where I worked for a company where a gay male actually had tried me and, like, told everybody my opinion, thought that it was going to cause controversy. And unfortunately, it really didn't because I was excellent at my job. But, you know, sometimes we as society within each other, we discriminate each other more than, you know, people on the outside. So I just want to chime in and basically say that I have experienced that myself. So I know exactly what you guys are talking about.
Can I ask you a question, sweetie?
What?
The gentleman that actually tried to out you, did you ever confront him in reference to that?
Much later down the line, because I was working there for like 4 years, and at first, I kind of think it was the fact that, you know how some gay people think that just because y'all are gay that y'all have to be close friends.
Mm-hmm.
And we just didn't know each other, and we didn't run in the same circle. So even though I recognized the fact that he was gay and he knew my tune, I didn't think that meant we had to be girlfriends. So
exactly.
I just didn't pay him no attention.
You were just cordial.
Yeah, and, you know, mutual people came back and told me, like, well, you know, Antoine said that, you know, you used to be a boy and you used to vote and you did all this stuff. And I just was gagging, like, really? Like, did you have to tell everyone that? It was just, eventually, I mentioned it to him. I just told him, I was like, no, we don't know each other like that, but I felt like it was not your place to say anything about what I used to be or how I used to live or how I'm living now. I said, but I'm a period as a mature woman, because back in my butch queen days, I would have busted him in his mouth. Yeah, that's a story. And I really was worked about it, but I just paid it best because I felt like it was kind of like a competition. He wanted to be the company bad, and he felt like I was kind of stealing his life a little bit because the girls that did know my tune, you know, they wanted to be my friend. They wanted to go out to lunch and things of that nature, and I felt like he thought it was competition. And I'm like, we're kind of in two different leagues here, you know. You're a gay man, and I'm transgender, so it's two different things. But, you know, I mean, the same, but you know what I mean, just not the same. So, I mean, but I got over it, and I paid
Can
it.
Can I ask you a question as well?
Sure.
I wanted to find out, because you did say that you were working in retail and everything. When you started to work, was it something that you had decided that you wanted to do? Let me ask you this. Were you ever an entertainer before you started working a 9-to-5?
I'm going to be honest with you, because I went in front, because y'all know me from a can of paint. I never, ever did it, only because I've always been the type of person, I never wanted to be a statistic. So I never wanted to be the atypical transgender. So I just personally never went that route. And I started off working as a feminine butch queen. Like, I was like, I guess how Kanye said she used to be. I used to be very effeminate. People never really knew. Even when I was a butch queen, people really weren't sure if I was transitioning, if I was in drag, or what. I always kind of looked like a girl, even as a boy. So I just always worked, always. And then even when I decided to transition, and girls were like, well, you should do an ad, or, you know, we don't hit the booth. And I was like, oh, no, like, I'm not judging you, but, you know, I'm cool. I don't want to be put in that box. You know, I've been working. I'm going to keep doing the work. And, you know, to be honest with you, I really don't have a lot of girlfriends in the scene because of that, because they like to say that I feel like I'm better. Because I do believe it or not.
She is so
Believe it or not, like, there's girls that I came up with who actually stay behind my back. Like, you know, she thinks she's better because she goes to work and she sticks at a job. You know, she thinks she's good, she's bad, but, you know, she's just like everybody else. You know, little stuff like that. And my response is, I didn't know that I had to think that I was better. So, you know, fit into society. You're not even necessarily fit in, but like Tanya said, contribute and, you know, pay my dues and just be quote unquote normal, get up every day and, you know, go to work, you know. But believe it or not, the girls, they normally say, like, oh, she thinks she's better, you know, her nose is in the air because she go to work and, you know, she on turn dates. It's stupid, but.
That sounds more like jealousy to me.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and that's something that I also wanted to bring up tonight as well on the show. You know, and I'm glad the way the show is falling into place, because it is something that I wanted to bring up, is the own, you know, the hatred, jealousy, and bigotry that we have within our own selves, you know, as far as what we get from our own people. And we have to go through this coming out of the closet. We have to go through this with society. We have to go through this with, you know, in the workplace and schools and stuff. Then we finally find our own community where we feel that we are accepted. We feel that, okay, I'm around my own kind. I feel more safer here. But then it turns into a whole new chapter. And you have to deal with the new, you know, the people that are hating on you, the people that are jealous of you, the people that are, you know, they want to label you and stuff. And it's like, when does the battle end? You know, as a teenager, you're going through it with your family and with school. As a young adult, you're going through it through the workplace and through college and things of that sort, and dealing with it in society when you go to rent apartments, you know, buy cars, you know, whatever you're doing, your neighbors, you go through it with relationships and, you know, their family, your family, their brothers and sisters, your brothers and sisters. And then you finally move on to our, you know, our world, our community, and now this is what we're dealing with. You know, does it ever stop?
Nope.
Unfortunately, Jasmine, no, it doesn't.
It doesn't.
But the thing is I think Each situation that you go through, it makes you stronger and stronger and stronger. And you just, eventually you just continue to just live your life.
And you know what, go ahead.
You know what's really sad? You know, you say you live your life, but it would be so much more easier for us to live our lives if we could live it with people that's in our community that, like you said, you came out with and that you can actually grow old with. But it just seems like the people who are coming out with you are the same people that try to out you or turn you out or just talk about you. And that's the sad part. That's the real
sad part. And what do you say to the individuals that can't? And let's keep it real. Now, we are older, so 25, you know, 25, 35, whatever, we are older. If we're having a bad day or we're going through something or we have a situation and we just don't want to go through it alone, I can't call my mom or my dad or my brothers and my sisters, because the first thing you're going to say is, child, they're not going to understand because. You know, they're just not going to understand. Or you think about talking to them, and, you know, the first thing they want to say is, child, it's your gay friend, or, you know, it's because you're gay, or it's because you're a fag. You know, you got to hear all that from them, so you push that side away and say, I'm not going to go to them. But then you have your brothers and your sisters and your house members and house children and house parents, and you're reaching out to them to talk about your situation or whatever you're going through. And you can't trust them. You tell them one thing, and it twists and turns into something else over here, and it's posted on Facebook, Twitter, all over the place. 10 people got a different story, and it's like, child, what? I didn't even say that. Or I said that, they, you know, you could say, child, I'm having an issue, and next thing you know, 10 people done got the same story, and they'd be like, child, I'm going through this and going through that, and you heard about what we are going through. It's like, damn, who do I talk to? I feel secluded. I feel like I am so trapped right now. I feel like I just don't have no one to talk to. And that is the bad part about our lifestyle as well. See, a lot of us, you know, I notice in straight society, a lot of them run to the shrink. They all have shrinks, and psychiatrists and things of that sort. I got to go see my shrink. I got to go see my shrink. Or we're going to have a family counselor. We're going to see our family singer on the Braxton, Miss Sherry, Dr. Sherry, whatever. They always want to see this Dr. Sherry or whatever. But bottom line is, how many of us as gay individuals, do we have a counselor to call? Do we have counselors? Or do you see a counselor?
Excuse me?
Do you see a counselor?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. Tanya, do you go see a counselor? Is that when you're having a bad day, you go see a counselor?
No, but what I do have, and which is a beautiful thing, is I have a tight knit group of friends. If I'm going through something, I can talk to my friends about anything, and nothing is guarded. Like, we talk, and what I love about my friends is, like, a lot of people that are in the ballroom scene, like, you know, they know me as Tiny and Tiny Cartier, and, you know, she walks the labels and she walks this and walks that. And my motto is, if I can't be around you in my sweats and my track sneakers with my scarf on my head, and I don't feel like getting all dialed up with the makeup and all that other foolishness, then I don't need you around me. Mm-hmm. And that's how I can't speak for anyone else, Jasmine or R, but that's how I choose to live my life. If you feel uncomfortable because you live in, you know, you expecting to see this tiny, where's the stilettos and where's all
the Glamazon, right?
Yeah, the Glamazon. No, because Tiny don't dress like that all the time. Tiny likes her sweatsuits and her sneakers every now and then, too. And her scarf on her hair, she don't feel like putting no makeup on. No, that's Tiny. And if I can't be that Tiny around you, then I don't need you around me. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
And I also feel like, you know, when you asked me about counseling, you know, my counseling came because through my addiction I had counseling. But as far as everyday life, it's like, if you can find one person in your lifetime that you can call a true friend, then you are truly blessed.
Yeah.
You are truly blessed.
Oh, my God.
You are. Yeah.
You understand? Because you have to go through so many people and expose yourself so many times before you find that right person that's not going to take your laundry to the laundromat.
But what do you say to the people? Because I know that I mean I can speak my story alone, but I can speak about it. But I'm going to use the example. What do you say to the ones that you think are your friends for so many years, or you think that they are your friends?
That's
you
what really hurts, though. What really hurts, because
that's
you think these
hurts.
Are the people that are going to be there for you through thick and thin, and then you find out that these are the same people that's talking about you behind your back. And
yep.
That's when you build
You're
up
right.
this tolerance that the gay people call shade. And it's not shade. It's a defense mechanism to keep the bullshit the fuck away.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, because right now I am labeled as shady, I am labeled as evil, I am labeled as the devil, I am labeled in so many manners from different individuals, and the sad part is these are individuals that I thought we were close with. You know, I thought we had a bond, I thought. But again, over the years, being older and over the years, it's like, I'm just not going to let everyone in, because eventually you get tired of being hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And having the background that I have of losing my biological family, and I think we lost Tiny, her call dropped, but losing my biological family. Okay, TJ's call dropped and another caller's call dropped. What is happening?
You think your board is going down?
I think this is usually when people's phones are dying, but they're still there. There's still people that are there. But I just think that a couple of them are, now they're saying what happened. I don't know.
J-Rock still there?
J-Rock, if you're there, press 1.
The young lady that was just talking, are you still there?
No, she's not there either. 301-655, are you on the air? 301-655 and 323-775. Are you still there?
Yeah.
Okay, we didn't lose you. I mean, there are still people. There's still a lot of callers online, but I think a lot of these other people are just kind of dying out. Their phones are dying. And we probably should wrap it up shortly.
Yeah.
Hold on, I'm going to read a couple of messages. Now, how about the ones you are true friends with who betray you with people who don't matter either? With people who don't matter to either of you. And that's true. What do you say about your friends that, you know, they betray you with, like, people who were irrelevant and stuff? They just kind of turn, they're just really quick to turn on you and stuff. What do you say about that as well?
For me?
Yeah.
Anybody, you can sit there with us.
Oh, I mean, we're like, as far as, like, friends go, you have to really be selective because people that pretend to be your friend at one point in time, and then they, you know how people be like, oh, they two-faced or they just flip or they have their moments, and you deal with that and you move past it and they still do things to, you know, betray your trust or betray the relationship that you call a friendship. How could you, like, I don't know, like, how could you graduate from that and just be like, okay, we're going to let bygones be bygones, let the past be the past, whatever, you know what I'm saying, the misconfusion or the miscommunication or whatever that, you know what I'm saying, you didn't understand or the problems that got bigger than what they were supposed to be and they couldn't be mended and y'all tried to, you know, come together but it still doesn't work. That, for me, would make, like, a person don't matter. That's what I feel like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that would make it like, how would you say it? Like, I don't know.
I have learned what I'm trying to say
like a little bit?
Yeah, I do, because I've learned that, you know, you can only trust a person but so far and so many times.
Mm-hmm.
And after a certain amount of times that this person has disappointed you, you have to realize that this person doesn't have your best interests at heart. And it's time to move on. What I've learned at my age, and it took me a long time to learn this, that's why I say a lot of people who read me, if you make it to my age, then you can read me. But before that, you have to understand something. To thy own self be true, everybody else take a number, because everybody has a motive. Nobody is in your life just to be in your life. People come into your life for a season or for a reason, and you have to know which one of those are when it's time to move on. And once you realize what that is, then you can move on with no regret. I don't give nobody that much authority over my feelings anymore.
You're right. You can't allow it. You know, you definitely can't allow it. I want to read a couple of things that people have said over the course of the evening. Thank you for this show this evening. I appreciate you taking the time out to discuss real issues. You're welcome. Another thing is a lot of people feel that a lot of things that the people are going through is lack of a support system. Another thing they said is black people have come so far just to be black, just to be accepted in society and a black male. But black gays should strive to live above the stereotype and the same fear that closeted gays have, that fear of being outed and the humiliation that comes with it. Within the so-called normal society. That's the messages that are coming over. Another one was they have three gay teenagers that are listening to the show from a group home, and I guess it really was helping them this evening, and they say thank you so much. They actually wanted to call in and, I mean, they wanted to send messages over, but unfortunately when they sent the message over, the chat room had shut down, or I think it shut down. I'm not sure exactly what happened, but the switchboard was acting funny, so I couldn't see anything. But three gay children in a group home was actually listening to it with a counselor tonight, and it was helping them. So this show is definitely helping a lot of people. You're so right. I never thought that would be a thing. Okay. That's kind of different. But, alright, yeah. A lot of people
what I'd like to say is I just hope that tonight's show not only enlighten people who are coming out, but for those mothers and fathers who have been listening to the show, who have ball houses, that this will also enlighten you on the responsibility that you have to these kids who have not yet come out to their real parents, and they're using you as a blueprint on how to come out to their real parents in a way where they can still be accepted the same way you accept them, and maybe you can mold them into the person that they need to be in order to face their family and still continue to get the love that they're looking for from their family, and that if they don't get that love, that you'll still be there for them, and not be there for them just as a mother and father of a house, but as a true friend and mentor.
And that is the truth. That is definitely the truth. And, you know, people, I know in my situation, I have, you know, for years, being back in this ballroom scene, no matter how people label me, everyone doesn't do that. A lot of people love Jasmine, and I respect that. But I have a lot of people that have reached out to me and still reach out to me to this day about, you know, they're not in my house or wasn't affiliated with any house I was affiliated with. I had other house members that reached out to me because they felt that they knew of me, they've heard my voice before, and they say, I just feel like comfortable when you speak. I feel like I can talk to you. And they open up to me about so much. And I've been through so many things in my life that I truly can relate to a lot of things that people have gone through, from drugs, alcohol, death, family, abuse, struggles, crafting, fast money, escorting, prostitution. I can relate to so many things. The one thing that I do find myself having an issue with are when I speak to some of these kids is I can only speak upon things that I have experienced. Again, a lot of the youth have come across, you know, HIV, you know, and, you know, AIDS, and, you know, them having it themselves and things of that sort. That's the only thing I can't relate to when I speak to them, because of the fact that I'm okay. So when I get a person that reaches out to me and says, Jasmine, I'm having a bad day, I don't have my medicine, you know, so forth and so on, I'm scared to go out there and talk to my real family about it. I'm scared to talk to my friends about it. I'm scared to, you know, I don't have medicine, I don't have this, I don't have that. I don't really know what to tell them. I just point them in the right direction, but I really don't know what to say to those individuals, because that's something that I haven't experienced in my life. Or the ones that are telling me it's so hard for me because I've been on this medication now for the first 6 months, and it's doing this to me, and it's doing that to me, and I have my bad days, and I have my mood swings.
But you just answered your own question. The only thing you can do is guide them in a direction in which you know someone can answer that question. We have so many people who do outreach, you know. In Philadelphia, you have Jay Blonick, you know. In New York City, you have the GMAC. You have Luna over there. You have Dre Ebony. You have so many people in New York that people can reach out to for information. These people are very knowledgeable when it comes to these things. So when it comes to something like that, we do have directions to send them in. You understand? Let me touch on this, because this is what really bothers me the most. You know, it's one thing to be accepted as saying you're the shadiest person in the ballroom scene and all that. It's cute, it's cute, it's cute. But at the end of the day, for so many people not to like you, that don't even know you, you ask yourself sometimes, who perpetuated this situation? Because if half the people that said they didn't like me knew me and wasn't going by what someone else told them, they wouldn't feel the way they felt. Because nine out of ten times, if there's five people in a, at a table at a bar, and one of those people say, oh, that's R.R., he's so shady, they're all going to hang on to that he's so shady. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Everybody's going to say, oh, that's Jasmine. That's that bitch that gives out all the money. That's all they think about. But they don't think about all the other good stuff that comes from what you do.
Or
they don't think about
the
fact that you're an entrepreneur.
The problem is when you have a friend or someone that you should consider in your circle and other people feed their ego or feed so much information to them and constantly whispering in their ear, ew, why are you around her? You know she's like this. She knows she's like, you know she's like that. You're like, no, no, she's not like that. And they're constantly feeding. And then as soon as you guys go through something, the first thing that they say is, I told you about Ms. Jasmine. I told you. And that's the first thing they want to jump on. They always told me this. I tried to not believe them. But the problem is that if you would have defended it in the very beginning, you would have put an end to them feeding you so much bullshit.
But then
and
at the end of the day, a lot of times people don't understand. You might be a certain way, but it takes a certain person to see that side of you. A lot of people are not going to see a certain side of you if they don't present themselves in a manner that causes you to show them that side.
Yep. And that's true. That's true. I mean, again, I'm not here because all this stuff is irrelevant as far as how people feel about me. As like I said, you know, with that one caller that called in earlier, or like the young lady that just spoke about her job and things of that sort, to know that I'm able to help one or two people, that's all that cares. To know that there are parents that are listening right now to this show. And I thank you again for listening. And I know when the show's over with, I probably will hear from you guys. But I know that this is helping those individuals. And I know that I have done something, again, to help someone, not everybody, but to help someone. All those other people that have so much to say and everything, I really, it hurts, but I don't let it control me. I still get up. I still do what I have to do. And at the end of the evening, I cannot control someone's feelings towards me. If it's jealousy, if it's hatred, if it's can't take, if it's, you know, whatever they're going through, I cannot control that at all. I'm very supportive towards everyone. So I don't see where people get that from. But, I mean, again, I'm not going to sit here and try to explain that at all. Again, tonight's show is about helping someone. And I just want those parents out there to listen when I say this. And you guys know who I'm talking about. Take the time with tonight's show, and there's an archive where you can listen to it again, to listen to what other people have said. Tonight, a lot of people have shared their own experience. Take the time to listen, and not just with the few people that we had speak, but there's thousands and thousands of people that are going through this every day, all through the world. Take the time to understand that what you say or the way you look at your gay son or your gay daughter, because it's not just butch twins who go through this as well. It's a lot of lesbians as well. Take the time to look at what they're going through, and they're already dealing with so much in their personal life. They're going through so much with their own experience, acceptance in their real life and what they have to face day to day, not just at home with you, but with what they're going through in the job place, in the workplace, and in schools, in their own relationships, in their own life, that when you sit there and you judge them or throw those things in their face or bring it up, it hurts. It adds flame to it. Because they would probably get so much comfort from just hearing you say it's going to be okay, or by you being that shoulder for them to lean on, because you are the mommy, you are the daddy, and you, no matter what, you are going to let them know it's going to be okay. See, I lost my mom years ago, and it was very hard after I lost her, because that voice of hers was able to comfort me no matter what day I was having. And to not be able to hear her voice and go through the things that I went through in life, it still hurts. Because after I lost her, I had no one to comfort me. But you are still there to help your child, because your child loves you. And no matter how mad they have gotten, and no matter what they have thrown in your face or whatever, they love you. And when you say those things, it hurts them. So I just want people to understand that. And also, to the people that have closed their doors on their family as well, because they didn't accept you, or things of that sort, maybe try not to give up as much. You know, some people over time do come to an understanding and a grip. Like I think J-Rock said earlier about his grandmother saying, child, my gay grandson is the only one out of everyone, so ain't nobody going to say nothing negative about him. You will find that one or two members in your family that will accept you. So don't
and
give up so much.
And the same thing like with Tiny. When
mm-hmm.
Tiny said her grandmother says, well, what do we call you now?
Mm-hmm.
And she said
yeah.
she learned
yeah.
to respect the fact that this is who you are, and we have to respect that.
Yeah, definitely. And a lot of us will give up so quickly, you know, because we're short-tempered and things are not going fast. And if we give up so quickly and we close the door on them as well, so maybe don't close the door so quickly on someone who is really maybe just a little confused or misunderstood. You know, because we can say the same thing about each other. You know, just because you don't understand me and my situation, don't judge me so quickly. And, you know, just because you are going through something, they judge you so quickly. Or you're the shadiest. They don't understand you. They don't know you. Take the time to get to know that individual before you judge them. And take the time to, even with your own family, understand their position as well. It's like one hand washing the other. So I just want people to listen and understand that, because it's hard for everyone. It's hard for them to accept it, and sometimes it's hard for you to accept it. And because you're mad at yourself already for what you're going through, you'll take it out on everybody. And a lot of
but
people
you also
give up
have to understand your parents, deep down inside, they love you, but this is just as new to them as it is to you.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times, some people just don't know how to deal with the new. So
yeah.
rather than try to deal with it, they try to avoid it, reject it, or slander it.
Or do what I did. You know, a lot of people have so much to say about me and my family. I pretty much did what was, you know, superior to them. I said, okay, you know what? I'm approved to y'all. I'm approved to you guys exactly what you said I wasn't going to be. I'm going to be the opposite. And
mm-hmm.
I have become and surpassed them, surpassed my own biological father. I have surpassed each and every one of my family members. And I was always the gay one. I was always the bad one. I was always the one who did this.
And that's
and
the same thing J-Rock said. You know,
yeah.
J-Rock said the same thing. And it pretty much, I think that simplifies a lot of us,
mm-hmm.
that we are always the ones that are the outcasts, but we always become the one that's the role model.
Yep. Yep, so don't give up so quickly on them. Just show them, okay, you know what? You can call me everything you want to call me, but this is what I'm going to do. And send them pictures and send them postcards and everything. But I think we should wrap up the show because it's getting a little late. I just want to read one more statement. I am a parent. I would never push my boys away because I know the world will be against them. So I want them to take comfort in knowing that they have their mother and father for support. I don't understand how a mother or father could do that to their child. Pisses me off. So that's a message that I did get as well. But I want to say thank you to everyone that spoke tonight, because as always, your voice is very important. R.R., did you want to make any closing statements?
I just want to say to all the young people out there, you know, if you're struggling with coming out to your family, then before you make that decision to tell them, try to find an older person who's already experienced that and ask them for some advice. It's not something that you have to enter alone. And just remember that, you know, you are not alone. You always have God, and God will always guide you in the right direction. And whenever you feel the need to try to really get somebody to listen to you, you can always feel free to call Jasmine Couture because her ear is always open.
What?
Yes, Mother Jasmine.
I know, that's right. What are you doing this week?
I have, I'm getting ready for a show that I'm working on, and I've been doing some castings, so the castings are done. Now we're just picking the people we're going to use for the show and then get ready for fittings and things of that nature. So, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to
enjoyed the show tonight, and I want to thank Tiny and J-Rock and all the other callers who called in because you really enlightened me on a lot of things. I want to thank you, Jasmine, for giving people a forum where they could actually come and express things of that nature. And I hope that you come up with a great topic for next week. And I look forward to knowing what that's going to be come next week.
Well, thank you. I try.
And don't let people get you down. Because last night you got a little upset, and I was really surprised to see you get out of character like that.
What, last night?
Yeah, but we won't go there. That was yesterday.
I know, we can go there. Yeah, well, you know why you get out of character like that? Is because when you care about somebody so much and they turn on you, it hurts. It really, really hurts. And I think that's what happened. And that shit bothered me all last night and even bothered me today. But I'm over it. I wish her the best. And, you know, I just leave it at that. But, you know, that's how it goes. You know, when you have someone, if it was someone that I can care less about, it wouldn't even bother me. Child, please, fuck you, da-da-da-da-da. But
right.
When it's someone you care about or someone you have supported throughout everything, because lo and behold, no matter what anyone says and no one anyone feels, I have supported Nicole through a lot as far as, you know, her being a part of the show and, you know, her speaking on the show. I have supported her a lot. And for people to feed her ego, and then for her to have so much of an opinion on me so quickly, that bothers me because it makes me feel like, damn, well, what did I do this for all this time? But, you know, again, I haven't personally heard from Nicole in weeks. So that questioned our friendship. I haven't heard from her in weeks. So, you know, to hear her voice last night was actually the first time I've heard her speak in so long. But, again, I wish her the best. I hope everything works out tomorrow. It's her show, guys, at 10 p.m. I'm not sure the number or the website. It's on Blog Talk. But support her show as well because I have always supported her, and I know she brings a very good flavor to the youth and to of our generation and our society. That's the reason why I stuck with her so long and allowed her to be a part of it. So tune in to her show. I wish her the best.
Oh, and I want to say good night to TJ, too. Yeah, I forgot.
And PJ and Tiny and J-Rock and Day, the young boy that we spoke with earlier, and all the callers that spoke tonight, thank you so, so much for tuning in. And thank you so much for sharing. And to the parents that are listening and to the individuals that reached out to me that wanted to hear something, I pray and I wish that tonight touched you in some sort of way. So I just wish everyone the best. All right, you have a good week. I will talk to you soon. And callers, thank you so much for tuning in. You guys have a blessed week. We'll be back Monday for the weekend recap with Kelly, who is here as well. So now we're going to be able to have fun the rest of the weekend. You guys have a good one. Talk to you soon. Bye.